You're locked on to the Big Show, Calgary Sports Talk in the afternoon. Okay, smart speaker, play Sportsnet 960.
Well, I'm going to start the show today by me eating a little bit of crow. All we talked about yesterday, Logan, was the fact that the Vegas Golden Knights were not only going to win the series, but they were going to blow the Minnesota Wild out of the water in Game 6, a series that shouldn't have even gone six games. Will Nault, Logan Gordon, along with you on the Big Show live from the Iconic Electric and Controls downtown studio. And Logan, you and I, well, mostly me, could not be more wrong about how Game 6 went. It was a very evenly played game. I thought both teams battled. Certainly you can have some questions, or there is some gray area in the disallowed goal with Alex Tuch and the goalie interference, which, by the way, it seems like every playoff we have this discussion in some form or another. But goalie interference, again, has kind of dominated the conversation in the last 3 or 4 days. You've had a lot of goals that have counted and a lot of goals that haven't counted, but they've all looked the same. So I don't know if there's ever been more gray in that rule. But Alex Tuch was deemed to have been interfering with Cam Talbot, which denied the Golden Knights the game-tying goal from Chandler Stephenson. And while the rest is history, Cam Talbot with the shutout, Minnesota forcing a Game 7 against the Vegas Golden Knights tomorrow, our first Game 7 of the Stanley Cup playoffs. And man, I could not be more wrong about how Game 6 played out. Give a ton of credit to the Minnesota Wild, who are not done just yet.
No, they've continued to play Vegas strong in this series, just like they did all year. And maybe we should have, perhaps giving them some more credit based on how the regular season went, because they seem to have found a way to be successful against this Vegas team. And it seems as though most times you can usually throw out most of what the regular season brings you in these series. But this one just seems to be a bad matchup in some areas for Vegas. They just can't seem to get that offense going like they normally do. And I thought you're right. Minnesota played a near perfect game yesterday, and when they needed it in the third period, they were able to put three home, a disallowed goal or not. Minnesota was probably the better team yesterday.
Now, the big debate, or the big conversation, it appears from the outside with Vegas in regards to tomorrow's contest, is what happens between the pipes. Not to sit here and say that Marc-Andre Fleury's been at fault, but we know they were outshot 40-14. Vegas outshot Minnesota, 40-14 in Game 5. He allowed a couple of goals in that contest, and he allowed three again last night. And Robin Lehner is just sitting there waiting. The final 24 games of the regular season, Pete DeBoer, it was like it was minor hockey. It was straight up rotation. One game Fleury, next game Lehner. One game Fleury, next game Lehner. And it was nobody played two in a row, the final 24 games of their season. They get to the playoffs. Fleury's played better. He had a better year than Robin Lehner when you break down the numbers. So they go with him. And as you do in the playoffs, you kind of stick with the one goaltender. They have not had a back-to-back situation. So it's allowed them to certainly keep that Marc-Andre Fleury in goal. But, Pete DeBoer was asked today, and he said, hey, I haven't revealed my goaltender all series. I'm not going to do it now. Would you make a change? Would you stay with Marc-Andre Fleury? Is it a big talking point or a big discussion for you?
I don't know that it is either way, because both of them are so solid, and I'm not sure that you're getting a dramatically different result from either one. They're both capable number one goaltenders, and like we've seen a couple times, I think the Florida situation is a bit different because Bobrovsky hasn't had nearly the success that a Marc-Andre Fleury or even a Robin Lehner have had at times this year. But, both of these guys have been going back and forth. For the Islanders, they weren't afraid to make a change going both, Varlamov and Sorokin. It paid off. You find the guy there. Maybe it's just a different feel. Give Minnesota a different look. I don't think that it's necessarily a bad thing. And look, Marc-Andre Fleury, for better or for worse, has been doing this for a long time now, going back to his last couple of years in Pittsburgh. He's pretty used to having to deal with the switching out of other goaltenders. If they do go to Lehner, I don't think it's a bad thing, but, Fleury's been here before too, so it's nice for Vegas. I don't know that either decision's going to hurt them one way or the other.
Yeah, and they've got the benefit, of course, of playing it at home in a Game 7. There will be a lot of fans at T-Mobile Arena, And we'll wait and see what happens for Game 7. Again, it might not even be a discussion internally, but we know Pete DeBoer saying today that he's not going to announce who his goaltender is. We'll have to wait and see tomorrow. 7 o'clock puck drop, by the way, for that Game 7, our first of these 2021 playoffs. Tonight, there's a couple of games on the schedule. We'll quickly go through them. We've got a jam-packed show, by the way, a condensed program today, just 3 hours with you. As 5 o'clock, we are off to Toronto for the Leafs and the Habs. Game number 5, Toronto looking to advance and win their first playoff series in 17 years. Last one coming in 2004. We'll see if they can close that out tonight. And then Game 6 in Nashville as the Preds try to do what the Minnesota Wild did last night, and that's win on home ice to force a Game 7. That one through 5 games has been a complete homer series. The last 3 have gone to overtime. Carolina winning Game 5 to grab that 3-2 series lead. Let's start with Carolina-Nashville, Logan. This has been a weird series, but again, 3 straight games to overtime. There's not a lot to pick between the two teams. And from the outside, it looked like it was going to be maybe a cakewalk for Carolina, but give Nashville a ton of credit. And more importantly, UC Saros, who has kind of finally arrived and said, hey, I am ready to grab the net and be that number one guy for Nashville. It started in the regular season and it's carried over into the playoffs. He's been brilliant in this series.
He sure has been. And in a couple of games where I really feel like Carolina outplayed them and had the better of the high danger scoring chances, he's kept Nashville in it. I feel like you don't necessarily see too much of a difference between Nashville and even a team like Minnesota, where I thought Carolina and Vegas were the clear favorites. In the Minnesota-Vegas series, though, the games have been a little bit closer. I think Nashville's kind of hung on a bit and relied on their goaltender more so than a team like Minnesota has. They'll need another good performance from him tonight in UC Saros if they want to push this to 7, because the Carolina team, when they're coming on, can be really, really tough. And we've seen that, you know, that can be a difficult thing for Nashville to handle at times. But give them credit, pushing it to 6 is farther than I had this series going to start. So,
3 things for me for Montreal if they want to keep this series alive and play in front of fans on Saturday in Game 6. A, you need to find some way to get that power play going. Just need some sort of life on your power play. B, you need to get Brendan Gallagher and Cole Caulfield going. Brendan Gallagher, we've made so much about his absence and how much he means to that team, which both are true. But in this series, he is pointless and really has not had that same impact that I think many have expected. Although he has drawn a couple penalties, it hasn't helped because the power play hasn't been any good. And Carey Price would be the third thing. He needs to continue playing the way he is to give this team a chance to win, because we know it's very unlikely they score 4 or 5 goals in this contest. They're in tough, I would suggest, to force a Game 6. But if they do, not only will they have fans, but they might have Toronto thinking, oh, here we go again. This is a massive game tonight for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Absolutely it is. This Leafs team has had struggles getting out of the first round in previous years. We don't need to detail any of that history, but if you're Montreal, you know, be motivated, be excited for the fact that you might be able to, I know it's only 2,500 fans, but that's, you know, a lot compared to what we've had in the North Division this year. So use that as some motivation, get into the fight early, try to get one, past Jack Campbell as early as you can, plant that seed of doubt. This is a Leafs team that I think could probably just write off game number 1 because they lost their captain and they were a little bit shook up by that whole situation. But they haven't faced a lot of adversity from this Montreal team, and I think that they still need to prove, at least to me, that they've gotten over that and that they're ready to get over that hump. So if you're Montreal, you know, put the pressure on Toronto. You've got nothing to lose at this point, down 3-1 in the series.
We'll have that game for you, by the way, as I just mentioned, a condensed big show. We've got a jam-packed show for you. 5 o'clock, we are off to Toronto. Game 5, Leafs and Habs. Should also mention, John Tavares was back on the ice today. He skated before his team's morning skate, and that is good news. Logan and I have been talking about him pretty much all week. Good news to see him back on the ice, but again, no timeline on his return, and I don't think we'll see him until the midway point of round 2. At the earliest. He is Logan Gordon. My name is Will Nault. We're live today at the Iconic Electric and Controls downtown and home studio. And of course, Iconic is proudly owned and operated from Western Canada since 2008. They take great pride in giving back to the communities that we all work and live in. Community, it's Iconic. Contact them today at iconicec.com. Vegas.ca. We continue when we begin our jam-packed day of guests with a very special guest down the Atlas P10 Sports Bar guest hotline. She is the voice of the Canadian leg on the Secret Dream Gap Tour taking place in our fine city over this past week, and it will transition to the Saddle Dome on Friday. The last couple of days has been at the Seven Chiefs Complex, with the Calgary Hitmen called home this year. Our city, of course, is home to some wonderful facilities, and cool that the Seven Chiefs is getting its billing because it is a phenomenal facility. And joining us right now from Sportsnet.ca and 660 News, she is a friend of the program. Sandra Priscina joins us right now. Sandra, how are you?
Well, I'm doing real well. Goodness, it's been so long since I've even seen you, so it's nice to talk.
Yeah, we're colleagues and friends, and I don't think I can remember the last time I've seen you. That's how weird this world is that we're living in. Of course, New York, Chicago, St. Louis, we're on the American tour, and now the Canadians are getting their turn to watch some of the best women in hockey take on each other. And the Canadian leg of the Secret Dream Cap Tour is ongoing right now in our city through Sunday. It's supported, of course, by the Calgary Flames. And right now we're in the middle of the round robin competition. Sandra, just to begin, a very, very wide open question for you. How much fun has this been over the last 3 days?
Well, this has been wild because it's been so long since we've seen these players on the ice. And I was saying to Kristen Hague, who's been doing the color commentary with me, you forget how good they are. And the first game, Marie-Philippe Pouin scored shorthanded on a breakaway, and it's just like, she's really, really good, because you forget. We often take for granted how good these players are because we can't see them as often as we see NHL players, AHL players, even junior hockey players. So just to see her up close in person, goodness, she is still so, so phenomenal. So it is a treat. It is a blast. I know these Canadian players, they've been chomping at the bit so long because, like you said there, their American counterparts have had a number of stops, including that wicked one at MSG. So the Calgary Flames stepping up, and I know the players here are very, very grateful.
Well, and how excited are they? I know they got one more game today at Seven Chiefs, and then Friday they ship to the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. It isn't MSG, but how much excitement is there amongst these players to go to the big rink on Friday?
It's huge. It's a big game experience, exactly like you said, and just to be able to be in an NHL facility. And, of course, they've had a wonderful time here at Seven Chiefs. It was a perfect facility for the Hitmen earlier this season. I was talking to Brad Curl, and he just talked it up so much. And now that I have the opportunity just to see what we have here, so the players really embracing what they've had here at Seven Chiefs, and then they'll turn their attention to that three set of games here coming up Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Quick turnaround. Still don't really know who's going to be in that championship game, but this game this afternoon should be pretty good. Team Bauer, Team Sonnet. So Team Bauer based out of Montreal. That's where Marie-Philippe Poulin plays. Toronto, they've got a lot of good players. Sarah Nurse, Natalie Spooner. And they played in the first game on Monday. Sonnet lost. So I think they're looking for a little bit of redemption right now. Just 2 points separating them in the standings. And Will, what's really cool is the standings. You don't only just get awarded for winning a game. Yesterday, we saw a player score a hat trick and more than five goals in total as a team. So you get 2 extra points in the standings. So really, it's anybody's game who finishes first.
Well, and that's exciting to me, you know, to know that usually the round robin, you can go halfway through and you're like, okay, well, we know these teams are out and these teams are in. Well, as you say, you still don't know who's going to play on Sunday, which leads to some great excitement over these final couple of days. You've seen every team twice by my count already. Who has stuck out to you maybe the most?
Team Bauer. Oh, my goodness. Montreal is so good. And just to go with that, people are wondering, why is Team Scotiabank from Calgary struggling? And the reason is they've only played or had 2 practice sessions since November. Quebec was really lucky. Their restrictions were lifted. So that allowed the Montreal Hub to get together to practice, work on specialty teams for many, many months. And we're seeing that on the ice right now. I mean, head and shoulders, they are fantastic. And it's not just Marie-Philippe Poulin. I mean, Anne-Sophie Batté, so many good names. They have 3 goalies who have immense Team Canada experience. Today we're going to see Geneviève Lacasse. She spent a little time with the Calgary Inferno. Also want to give some love to Rebecca Leslie. Her brother, Zach, was playing for the Stockton Heat. They have a really cool story. And she also played for the Inferno way back when, won a Clarkson Cup here in Calgary. So a lot of neat storylines, but definitely Montreal sticks out to me.
I know a lot of fans will be familiar with her name. Do we have any update? I apologize if I don't know the latest condition, but I know Natalie Spooner took a stick up high yesterday in that contest.
Yeah, so good news there. She left on her own yesterday, and I double-checked with the folks here at the PWPH, and it sounds like she's good to go. She will likely be on the second line once again, and really, it was a scary moment. I've never really seen something like that as a broadcaster. You've got all this energy and a very somber moment. And what was crucial there is Bridget Laquette. You could hear her across the ice saying, "Spooner, I hope you're okay." So remember, a lot of these girls, they're teammates on Team Canada. So it hits pretty close to home. There's gamesmanship and sportsmanship, but then there's friendship as well. So
she is Sandra Priscina. She's joining us to talk all things the Secret Dream Gap Tour, which is taking place in our city. Of course, right now at Seven Chiefs Complex on the west side of the city. It'll move to the Scotiabank Saddledome coming up tomorrow through Sunday for the championship game, where the top two teams will go head-to-head after this six-game round robin. My name is Will Nault, and he is Logan Gordon.
Sandra, I'm just curious, from your perspective as someone who spends a lot of time in sports, how important do you think a showcase for these ladies is on a big stage like Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca? And we know that there'll be some national broadcasts coming up over the weekend here. How important do you think it is for the women's side of things in hockey?
Yeah, it's definitely been huge. This last year and a half has been an absolute gut punch to women's hockey. Two worlds basically canceled. We might have one sometime later this summer. The Olympics are coming up. Nobody's had any opportunity to practice together. And the thing is, with women's hockey, it is such a sport that draws people together. They may not watch it on the surface, but you know these players. You know them. When Canada and U.S. meet for a gold medal, you know who Natalie Spooner is. You know who Rebecca Johnston is. You know who Marie-Philippe Poulin is. But the fact is, they can't do this day in and day out as a profession. And that's really sad, because they're the best athletes in the world at this sport. So having them showcased and seeing just how good they are on national television, it's huge. They deserve the media focus. And it shouldn't just be for this week. This really needs to continue. And hopefully people will latch on to it. We've got a lot of Calgary-based players here. They might not be with the national program, but we do have Calgary-based players playing for Scotiabank. So give them some love. And especially since the Inferno and the CWHL no longer exist, there's something that needs to happen. And hopefully that's the stepping stone right here.
Will mentioned it earlier. There's been a couple of different legs to this, and we've seen some NHL teams partnering up. And even as the NHL season was coming to a close there, we started to see, at least here in Calgary and some other places, some of the players were repping some of the PWHPA gear and trying to bring some attention to this. How important is like an NHL association to this? Because I know that there's been lots of talk back and forth about the inability for them to come together for a Will unified women's league, and they've had trouble keeping that up. And we know that by, you know, losing the Calgary Inferno here a couple of years ago now, and now to see the NHL teams and some of the players giving them their attention and some of that spotlight themselves, is that a big step forward for you, or do you think that there's another way into them really branching out into their own league?
Yeah, I definitely think it's a starting point, Logan. And when you see somebody like Johnny Gaudreau or Chris Tanev donning a red PWHPA shirt, It gets to a whole other audience, because women's hockey and women's sport in general, they have a very niche audience. And when you get it to that broader audience in the NHL, because we know what kind of a following the Calgary Flames have, and even on a bigger stage, let's say somebody like Austin Matthews, Connor McDavid, some of the perennial superstars in the NHL, they're donning the colors of these teams. It's huge. So that platform is big. Like you said, Gary Bettman has said in the past, okay, we're not going to get mixed until the women can come together and form one league. But at least this is putting a little bit of pressure, I think, on the NHL, because when you have Canadian teams, especially, and some of these original six teams supporting these women, it's tough not to notice.
She is Sandra Priscina. She is the voice of the Canadian leg in Calgary here of the Secret Dream Gap Tour. And face-off today goes at 3 o'clock. You can catch all the action on Sportsnet Now. And we should mention, Sandra, if you're not a subscriber to Sportsnet Now, some great opportunities this weekend with some, as Logan talked about, national broadcasts. Can you set us up for what happens this weekend as you do shift to the Saddledome?
Well, unfortunately, it's not going to be me calling the game, so it's going to be Leah Hextall and Cassie Campbell, so you're going to be in really good hands. We've been joking that they're the A-team, so they're going to handle that, but it's going to be fantastic. Obviously, Cassie has so much insight, not only as an analyst, but her experience as a hockey player. We really don't know who's going to play in that final on Sunday, so that's what's really exciting. Like you said earlier, all of the round-robin games count, so if you play really well offensively, or if you pitch a shutout, you're going to get some extra points. So I'm actually dubbing today's meeting between Toronto and Montreal as a bit of a swing match, because yesterday we saw one player score a hat trick. Another one had two goals. She was trying to get the hat trick. So lots of points up for grabs. You will be able to see Team Scotiabank at least twice on national TV. So Team Scotiabank is the Calgary hub. A lot of familiar names there. I believe they play both Friday and Saturday. And listen, if things go their way, maybe they'll be in the game on Sunday. Who knows?
Well, I do got to set you up. We all love the prediction game. Sandra, who wins this thing when it's all said and done?
Team Bauer, no question. Montreal is just fantastic. And my understanding, actually, Will, is it's also streaming for free on YouTube, on the PWHPA YouTube account. So maybe if somebody might not have a Sportsnet subscription, you can get some eyeballs on it that way. I think they want it to hit an international audience as well. So there's a bunch of games to watch, a bunch of ways, excuse me, to watch today's stream. And then, like you said, coast to coast, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday on our Sportsnet channels.
You can follow Sandra on Twitter at @spresina. She'll have all the information there for you. As she just mentioned, you can catch today's game on the PWHPA's YouTube account if you are not a Sportsnet subscriber. If not, you can also catch it on Sportsnet now. 3 o'clock puck drop. We'll let you go get ready for your call. Have a great call, Sandra. Thank you so much for giving us some time, and have a fabulous weekend.
I appreciate it, guys. Miss you and hope to see you soon.
You bet. Right back at you. That's Sandra Pressina, voice of the Canadian leg on the Secret Dream Gap Tour. She joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, open for takeout and delivery. When you're tired of cooking, call 403-248-3344. Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar at 6060 Memorial Drive, Northeast. Take a break, come back, and welcome in Peter Labardius in his usual spot as we'll shift back to the Stanley Cup playoffs. The Big Show is live on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
The Big Show is live and streaming at sportsnet.ca/960. Sportsnet 960, The Fan, Calgary.
It's a loud guitar there. Welcome back to the program. It's Will Nault and Logan Gordon along with you live on The Big Show, Sportsnet 960, The Fan. We are just waiting to connect with Peter Labardius. But until then, pretty good start, I would suggest, Logo, for Alek Manoah on the Blue Jays mound is he's making his big league debut today. Of course, yesterday's game was postponed due to inclement weather, and today a doubleheader. He gets the start in game one. They are currently playing live on Sportsnet 1. Game is in the top of the second inning. He was perfect in the first inning. Well, not perfect. He did walk a batter, but two strikeouts and one inning in the bag. The guy's got some power and some energy on the mound. It was cool to see his mom loving life in the stands.
Yeah, those moments are always really special, and I think that it's been so cool. He's had to wait for a little bit more than he planned on yesterday, and then I'm sure the anticipation overnight was killing him, and now he gets to go out there at Yankee Stadium and have his big league dreams come true in front of his parents. That's always a really cool thing.
Flames Insider, Peter Labardius, brought to you by the Gemini Group Home Renovations. Your home renovations should be a reflection of who you are. Give your home the Gemini difference. The Gemini Group, now offering Air Miles Reward Miles. Visit GeminiGroup.ca.
Peter Labardius joins us right now. Hello, Lou. How are you, sir?
I'm good, pal. How are you?
We're doing okay. Let's dive in, I guess, first off, on last night. What do you make of the Minnesota Wild forcing a Game 7 against the Vegas Golden Knights?
I thought last night for Minnesota was the first game that they really, not necessarily dictated to Vegas, but it wasn't a game where, you know, Vegas dictated and had the majority of the chances. I thought Minnesota played, you know, an incredibly sound, give you very little type chance. You know, the new phrase, I guess, in hockey is, was a very low event game. The shots, the amount of quality chances. In terms of surprises, well, for me in these playoffs, And again, part of it is, you know, you watch, and I watch and watched other teams throughout the course of the year. But I have no trouble saying I thought Minnesota would be one of those teams that had a great year, made the playoffs, but might have been a bit of their mountain, and that this would be a real learning experience for them. But they, for me, in many ways, have been the biggest surprise of the whole playoffs. And as much as this is good on Minnesota, and it is the bigger story not what continues to happen in Vegas, where the last two playoffs now, you know, the bubble and this year, they get a lot of chances. And they dictate, and they have the puck, and they possess it. But man alive, they don't score easy. And without Pacioretty in their lineup, who might be a possibility for Game 7, you know, their productivity in regards to how much they have it and possess it and shoot it and create it, it has not materialized. And really, too, I mean, you know, game number 5 was the swing game. That was a game where, you know, the Wild score 3-on-8 early to build the lead. I think Vegas, what was the edge? 33-7 in the last two periods.
Yep.
And, you know, and we saw it in the bubble. Guess what? Cam Talbot not exactly struggling again in a playoff-type situation. So, you know, good on Minnesota. You know, I have a bit of a soft spot for them. However, I don't want the next round ruined, because if there's one thing I've been looking forward to in these playoffs, it's Colorado and Vegas. And right now, I know where all the pressure is. There's none on Minnesota. None. Zero. They're already, at least the way I look at it, they've already won more games than I expected them to in this round. So it's become a very fascinating and, for me, surprising series. And we'll see how Vegas responds, you know, in a Game 7. And my guess is chances are you're going to see a lot of the same script. And they need to capitalize. And if they don't, they might be on the outside looking in.
Not to say that he's been at fault, because he hasn't. In fact, he's been brilliant. But just knowing what Vegas has in their back pocket, and the final I don't think I've ever seen this in the NHL, certainly not in the last 10 years. But the last 24 games of the year, Pete DeBoer kind of ran it like a minor hockey team.
Back and forth.
Nobody played two consecutive. Do you make a goalie switch in Game 7?
Not a chance. Yeah. Not even crossing my mind. I mean, the amount of time now that Robin Lehner is gone without playing a game, and then throw him into that type of situation. And listen, outside of maybe one period, Marc-Andre Fleury has been brilliant in his own right in this series. So next round, maybe I'm thinking a little different, but there is no chance I'm playing anybody but number 29 in game number 7. No chance.
He's Peter Labardius. He joins us every single day at this time to talk all things hockey on The Big Show. My name is Will Nault, and he is Logan Gordon.
Lou, another early elimination for Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin, and this time again in the hands of the New York Islanders. That Islanders team is tough to play at the best of times, and when you're not going to get saves from your goaltender when you need them, they're pretty much going to be unbeatable. And that was a bit of a tough case and a tough game for Tristan Jarry yesterday as the Penguins season comes to an end.
You know, I felt for the former Edmonton Oil King Memorial Cup champion, and after going a long time without being in that type of an environment, you know, as I was talking to a good friend of mine today, I don't think there's any doubt for a young guy that, you know, was pressed into a situation in the NHL playoffs, just 26, really still learning, Logan, to be a number one goalie, that when it turned on him last night, And, you know, he was already feeling it in a big way after what occurred in Game 5, which, again, you know, we talked about Game 5 in the Minnesota-Vegas series. Pittsburgh, as much as it became about last night, don't you guys think that the second period of Game 5, when they completely ran the Islanders show, that's the period in that series that I think, you know, Sorokin was brilliant. Jarry was not down the stretch in that game, made the terrible play in double overtime. I don't know how many times I've said it over the years, and the playoffs are no different. When you are clearly the better team, you need to get enough out of it. And, you know, last night the Islander fans were incredible and they got going, and, you know, it's pretty interesting. And I know that on Rintoul and Sermon today, I was listening for an hour or so, and I guess Barry Trotz is pretty good. And I would suggest that Lou Lamoriello isn't hurting people's culture either, because since those two gentlemen ended up on the island, there's a lot of Islander playoff wins. I think the number is 5 now, including the bubble. And there's teams like Pittsburgh and Washington who haven't been able to find a playoff win since.
Well, and that's where I wanted to go next with you, because there's an interesting dichotomy in all of that, and that, you know, the expansion draft back, you know, when Vegas came in, it seemed pretty cut and dry for Pittsburgh that they have young Matt Murray and he's been able to have his moments, and they'll move on from Marc-Andre Fleury and that'll be that, and they'll be better off for it. And, you know, Washington wins the Stanley Cup and walks away from Barry Trotz, and both guys have found, you know, differing levels of success in their new home while both of their clubs have struggled to get out of the first round. Is it just a case you think sometimes we just overthink these things, or is this just kind of how hockey goes sometimes?
I think it is how it goes sometimes, for absolute sure. You know, there's always, I guess, Logan, what I would say is, you know, let's take Pittsburgh, okay? So you come off back-to-back titles in 16 and 17. You know, the salary cap always changes certain things. And you make certain decisions that work, and you make certain decisions that don't. And as you guys know, both of you know me well enough to know that, you know, I really try the best I can to not analyze things, you know, in the back mirror, if you will, looking behind. But let's take a look at Pittsburgh. So when they made the decision a few years ago to move on from Marc-Andre Fleury, for example, and went to Matt Murray, well, you know, he helped you win 2 Stanley Cups. But now, you know, here you are in a situation where you feel like goaltending really let you down, and it's fair, it did. It wasn't the only thing. So, you know, you don't get do-overs, and certain decisions work well. And in the case of Pittsburgh, you know, the one area has become goaltending, which is massive. But the other one for me, guys, and I'd like to hear you weigh in on the Pittsburgh situation, and they're at a crossroads, obviously, with the Malkin and Letang situation. Can you still go on, or, you know, do you need to trade one of those guys while you still can and recoup some assets? I've always felt in the case of Pittsburgh the last few years that their defense still isn't quite where it needs to be overall in terms of, you know, maybe getting over. But in saying that, when you think about, you know, that division and that group of 4 teams, Logan, further to your point, maybe in some ways aren't we making too much of it, because are the results really that surprising? You know, like, to me, no matter what the combination was coming out of the first round, wouldn't have surprised me, because I just didn't see a whole lot of difference between any of those 4 groups.
No, you're right. Might be a very similar story for this team, even if they had decided to keep Marc-Andre Fleury back then. It was just
That's right.
it's a tough division to come out of regardless of what you are. I think you make a good point on the defense, and Will, I don't know how you feel, but I think that's obviously been their weakest point in all of this too. You know, you're relying on guys like Cody Ceci, and they tried it out with Jack Johnson, and you know, as we know here, it's not always easy to make those big moves that you want to make. You just kind of get what you can get sometimes.
Yeah, 100%. And I think you nailed it with the overthinking it. And the other part of it, too, that we always do as media people or even as fans, it's very easy to have 20/20 hindsight, Lou, all the time.
No question.
It's so easy to be, oh, that was the wrong decision or that was the right decision. It's too easy that way a lot of times.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, the longer I'm around the sport and in this day and age and all the outside noise and all the extra influence, and it makes a difference for absolute sure in a lot of different ways. Gents, I don't know how many times I've said this either, but winning, okay, straight from the Situation Room and Wolf Blitzer, winning is not easy. And you need so many things to go right.
Yep.
You just...
Even the best teams need the bounces.
Everybody. You need health. You need bounces. You know, as the two series that we've been talking about, one isn't over, one is. What happens, you know, on a certain power play, in a certain period? It is so minute, the swing points and the differences when there's so little to choose. And, you know, because our focus right now is in the East, they're just so little to choose. And, you know, in the case of Boston and Washington, you know, Washington suffers a goalie injury really early. That didn't help. They ended up using three goalies. And whether it's Tristan Jarry or whether it was Samsonov, experience, guys, again, matters. You know, Justin Schultz didn't make a very good play in that double overtime situation where Ovechkin was barking like crazy at, you know, at his fellow countrymen. But the fellow countryman is brand new to the situation, too. Mm-hmm. So, again, a lot of factors, a lot of things need to go right, and don't underscore or undervalue, if you will, some good fortune, because it matters. It matters a lot, in fact.
Peter Labardius is our guest. Just before we let you go, Lou, a focus in on tonight. First off, with the Habs, I just can't help but think if you don't get Brendan Gallagher and a guy like Cole Caulfield going, obviously their power play has been a struggle, but they need a lot of things to go their way. How do they make this go to a game six and back in front of their own fans on Saturday at the Bell Center?
Well, I heard Brendan Gallagher today, and you know, whether they can carry it out, I think, obviously, he's the engine of the group. You know, he seemed to put things today in proper perspective. They're frustrated. They're unhappy with their play, and he talked again about, you know, the big cliche of embrace the situation, enjoy what you're doing, try your best to, you know, block out the frustration and the disappointment, hang around in a hockey game. And, you know, those two guys, well, you know, they're important, especially Gallagher. You know, again, Caulfield's a young kid who has ability, but he's brand new to the National Hockey League playoffs. And we should never discount that it's the best league in the world. And even if you're a great young talent, doesn't mean that that doesn't require some learning and going through it and understanding it. You know, one guy for me, and I mentioned it yesterday, is Josh Anderson. I really feel tonight if Josh Anderson and add Tyler Toffoli aren't really, really good, impactful players, Montreal's got a big, big problem. And their power play, and, you know, Dominic Ducharme makes a decision. He puts in Eric Gustafson tonight, and guess why? That's why.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's my guess. He's looking for more offense, somebody who can make plays, somebody, if he's not using them on his first unit, he's going to use them on the second unit. They have four goals.
They have four goals.
Yeah. And somebody against that Toronto team, you need to yep, figure it out. No question.
You're getting one a night. It's tough.
What about just how encouraging? I know you know the man very, very well. How encouraging was it to see before morning skate John Tavares back on the ice today in Toronto?
Oh, you know what? It gave me goosebumps. You know, with the knee injury too, guys, that he suffered in that horrific collision. I didn't see what I saw coming today as quickly. So unbelievably encouraging. You know, there's no timetable. We understand exactly why, but you know, it gave us a lift. I think, imagine what it did for his own group. So it's great. I didn't expect that quite so soon. And that doesn't mean, by the way, that I think he's right around the corner necessarily, but boy, that's a nice first step, isn't it, fellas?
It sure is. And yeah, I would say that, again, not a guarantee by any means, but certainly a step in the right direction and potential for him to appear in round two if the Leafs are able to move on and that series goes maybe perhaps longer than four or five games. I would suggest there's a pretty good chance we see him, but all the best to Tavares and hope the recovery continues the way it is. Final one before we let you go, Lou. Can Nashville force a game seven against Carolina?
Probably. The home team's won every game. Yep. Last three games, double, single. And that's not your favorite combo at whatever your favorite fast food place is. This is where we need Steinberg to chime in with a, can I help you? But I don't see any reason why not. This has been a great series. It really has. And many people, I think, felt like Carolina probably was in a position where they would have ended it. And that may very well happen tonight. I think something that, you know, again, not that it hasn't been talked about, you guys think Jacob Slavin gets enough credit in hockey for how important a piece he is and what a great defenseman he is in the NHL? And he's been struggling. Remember, he's missed some time in this series, came back for game five. That changes their whole group in a massive, massive way. I think, you know, there's a lot of guys that we give that underappreciated, if you will, tag to. He might be in my top five in the league of guys that don't get talked about a lot. He's a heck of a player. And if, you know, if his mom and dad are interested and it happens, you can get on the phone to the travel agent today and make your arrangements for Beijing.
You know, you talk about guys that don't get love. I know you're a huge fan of the young man from the Czech Republic up front who had a pair of goals in game five as well.
He's a good player. Marty Natchez. Remember watching him at the World Junior in Buffalo. And the first game I saw was Russia and the Czech Republic, a game that the Czechs upset the Russians. And, you know, even then in 2018, and there was a lot of promise, big, great speed, terrific skill set. You could see it emerging. And he was fabulous in game five. And I think he's just scratching the surface, my friend. I really do.
Yeah, I'm with you there 100%. I know you've been a fan of his for quite some time.
Yeah, he's probably going to Beijing too.
Yeah, I would. You could probably take that one to the bank too. No problem.
Yeah, I can call
Lou, you're a great man. Great stuff as always, pal. Have a fabulous weekend. We will talk to you tomorrow.
Okay, guys. Look forward to it. Have a great afternoon. I'll be listening.
Flames Insider, Peter Loubardias, brought to you by the Gemini Group Home Renovations. Your home renovations should be a reflection of who you are. Give your home the Gemini difference. The Gemini Group, now offering Air Miles Reward Miles. Visit GeminiGroup.ca.
Getting ahead of myself. It's Friday Junior. It's not Friday. It's Friday Junior. So, Lou, have a great weekend, but we will also talk to you tomorrow. It's a very weird way to sign off there with Peter Loubardias. He joins us every single day. A reminder, tomorrow Coming up on the Hit with Lou, it is another edition of Lou's Mailbag, and you've only got one more chance to win. Well, two more if you conclude tomorrow, but hint, hint, nudge, nudge. It's 3 o'clock on Thursday. If you haven't submitted for tomorrow, you're probably not going to win. But you've got one more chance. And every Friday, it's Lou's Mailbag for Ruth's Chris Steakhouse. We'll have that tomorrow at 2:30. And then a final chance for you to win a $100 gift card to Ruth's Chris when they are open to go and enjoy a fabulous steak dinner. We'll have one more chance coming up next Friday. Take a break. When we come back, it was not necessarily the happiest of memories, but just one memory as we look back on this date in Flames history to close out hour one of the Big Show next. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Let's go back in time and celebrate the amazing history of the Calgary Flames. Today in Flames history starts now.
Today in Flames history, brought to you by Wild Rose Brewery, keeping quality beer and food in the hands and bellies of Albertans. Check out wildrosebrewery.com for delivery or pick up some takeout from the Curry Barracks.
May 27th, this date in Flames history. Welcome back to the program. Will Nault and Logan Gordon along with you. And as they say, only one memory today on this date in Flames history. Probably not going to be the greatest of memories for Flames fans. But we take you all the way back to this date in 2004, 17 years ago. And, well, Tampa Bay evening up the Stanley Cup final in 2004 with the Flames. And here's how it sounded.
Rolls it back. The Cavalier looking sharp again.
Just playing back to back.
Up front. Can't get the shot. Wow, what magic he creates. Now a drive. Rebound. Score. This is exciting. Here's a chance for the Cavalier. What a pass. And what a goal by Stanley and the Cavalier. This baby's pretty well done. 4-0.
It would end up 4-1. Boy, is it always great to hear Bob Cole back in 2004. Martin St. Louis, Vinny LeCavalier, each with 2 points. Tampa even up the series after dropping game one at home to split it 1-1, coming back to the Dome for game three. And Billy Niemann scored the only goal for Calgary. We talked yesterday a lot about unsung heroes logo. I think Billy Niemann fits that bill in 2004 for the Flames.
Absolutely, he does. He was one of many of those, but he was just the ultimate pest, the grinding and skating and all of it. He was a pretty big hero for the Flames numerous times and just found some magic in the postseason like so many of those guys, and didn't turn out the greatest career for Billy Niemann, but he'll always have a special spot in Flames fans' hearts because of that run.
No doubt about it. He scored the only goal in that 4-1 loss. The Flames losing Game 2 of the 2004 Stanley Cup Final on this date 17 years ago. That is Today in Flames History.
Today in Flames History, brought to you by Wild Rose Brewery, keeping quality beer and food in the hands and bellies of Albertans. Check out wildrosebrewery.com for delivery or pick up some takeout from the Curry Barracks.
Take a break when we come back to the Stanley Cup playoffs and a special focus on the Leafs and the Habs. We'll be joined by Sportsnet's Justin Bourne in 2 minutes as the Big Show continues. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Streaming now through the Sportsnet mobile app. This is The Big Show. Sportsnet 960, The Fan, Calgary.
Welcome back. Happy Thursday. Hope you're doing well out there. And my name is Will Nault. He is Logan Gordon. We're live on The Big Show, Sportsnet 960, The Fan, from the iconic Electric and Controls downtown and, for my purposes, home studio. And a pleasure to go down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline to continue the Stanley Cup playoff conversation. We're joined by Sportsnet's Justin Bourne right now. Bourne, thanks for doing this, man. How are you?
I'm well. Well, good to hear you again.
Yeah, it's been a long, long time, and we'll dive deep into a bunch of different topics, but I did want to start here, and I'm curious. Of course, us as professional broadcasters are supposed to be as objective as possible, but small part of you with some fist pumps last night as the Islanders knock off the Penguins in 6 games?
Yeah, I make no claim to objectivity there. I figure the bloodline is tough to hide that allegiance, so very happy about that. You know, the thing I'm most pleased with is, like, Nassau Coliseum is a big part of my family's life. You know, my dad won Stanley Cups there, and his jersey was his number's not retired, but he's put into the Islanders Hall of Fame there, and that's where I met my wife. You know, the building means a lot to us, and seeing them get a win there and get to play more games in the Coliseum before it's sent out to pasture was a beautiful thing.
That being said, how nice is it going to be to have a new building at Belmont? I know they're excited for it. You're right. Nothing's going to ever compare to the Coliseum, and it is cool. They're going to continue to play there, but I know that they're itching for that new building. It's going to be pretty exciting when it's all said and done.
Yeah, it's one of those things that you can't let nostalgia blind you to the fact that the building's garbage. You know, like it's falling apart at the seams. The cement is just about to be, it's ready to be rubbish, whether they do it on their own or not. So very exciting, and just nice to have a place to attract players to say, hey, come to Long Island, great building, great fans, great facility. That can sell some good players on sticking around.
I also wanted to start here because I know you guys talked to Barry Trotz today on Hockey Central, and I found it very interesting. By the way, if you want to go listen to it, you can go to sportsnet.ca/960/590 to hear it on the Toronto website. But Barry Trotz with you guys today on Hockey Central, and I thought it was pretty cool to hear him talk about how he's kind of evolved over his coaching career. What was one thing that stuck out to you from your chat with Barry Trotz today?
Well, you know, I've asked a number of coaches, you know, whether they change their system to suit their players or if they just have their players play the system they believe to be the best. And I've never had an answer like Barry Trotz when he just said he looks purely at the roster and then caters to it and tries to make it the best it can be, which, by the way, is the only correct answer. You know, it's ridiculous to, if you don't have the horses to play an offensive system, try to play an offensive system, but it happens. You know, I think of John Tortorella as a guy that will play a defensive system, whether you give him, you know, the Sedins or a couple of penalty killers. So, yeah, I thought it was really cool that he said he's played, you know, he listed off a half dozen different forechecks that he's used over the years based on his personnel. So very flexible coach, open-minded guy, and changes based on what he's got.
Now, I want to continue on just last night for a second. I full disclosure, I was on here yesterday talking about how I thought there was zero chance it was getting to a game seven. I was surprised it got to six. Minnesota's been badly outplayed, but give them a ton of credit. They came to fight last night. They get the shutout. Cam Talbot's been brilliant. What have you made of the first six games? And I guess what are your expectations in tomorrow's game seven between Vegas and Minnesota?
Well, you know, this to me is less about Vegas and more about Minnesota and the strides they've made as a team. You know, Kirill Kaprizov has taken them quite a ways. Having an offensive threat has been a big deal, but Cam Talbot's goaltending, like, you don't get an underdog pushing a series this deep against a, you know, a cup favorite or one of the cup favorites without getting rock solid goaltending. So that's been a huge key for them. You know, playoffs are a funny beast, man. It's, things tighten up a little bit. You know, I don't know that Vegas has a great offensive team, but they don't have those, like, individual dynamic guys that I think of as, like, holy smokes, you know, best offensive players in the league. So when things tighten up and it gets a little thicker, they have a little bit more trouble scoring, and it's working for the Wild.
I would guess your answer to this is bleep no, but would you consider a goaltending change if you're Pete DeBoer in Game 7?
Yeah, it's got to be a no. He's just... You know, Marc-Andre Fleury's just been so special for this team in this series and this year. You gotta live. You live by the sword, you die by the sword, right? That's got to be the way this one goes out. Maybe it would make the Leonard camp too happy. I'm very much a fan of his, but Fleury's their guy. I can't see them making a change.
Live by the sword, die by the sword. I think his agent Alan Walsh would agree with you, Mr. Bourne.
I forgot.
He's
that.
Justin Bourne from Sportsnet. Yeah, exactly. Sportsnet 590 fan in Toronto and Sportsnet. You see him everywhere. Sportsnet.ca. He joins us right now on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline for all things Stanley Cup playoffs. I'm Will Nault. He is Logan Gordon.
Justin, to bring it back to the North Division series, we're going to see tonight Toronto with a chance to move on to the second round for the first time in a long time. Any bit of a different feel to this because we haven't had fans, or because it's been a North Division and a pandemic year? Any different feel to this when it comes to pressure on the Maple Leafs heading into an elimination game with a chance to go to round two?
There's pressure. And I think what's different about it is just the Leafs history looms over everything here. And, you know, maybe this is a rare situation where it's good that there aren't fans around. Maybe they won't feel that same level of mounting. Like, this to me tonight, if it were in Toronto with fans, it would be a sneaky, quiet crowd. Like a very uncomfortable crowd that, we need to get through this. Because it's funny, I've talked to a lot of Leafs fans, and I'm like, looking good. Like, you know, 3-1. And they're all like, we'll see. You know, like, no one wants to commit to it. So sneaky pressure looms over them at all times.
And you're closer to this team than we are. And I say that half jokingly because I know we're all at least 6 feet away from everybody at all times in this current state of our lives. But what does John Tavares being back on the ice bring for that team? I know that there's always question marks when you're talking about a concussion and a pretty scary looking injury like he had. But the fact that their captain was back in the facility yesterday, able to be out on skates today, that a boost for them heading into this game?
It's a boost, and I think it's a boost because for a lot of people, I think you looked at this series that they're in, and you think they were going to get through it either way. You know, if they lost even without Tavares, it was going to be a big old, that's not good enough. And the big picture was just like, it hurt because it felt like it took the realistic cup hopes, a major blow to the realistic cup hopes. And so I think with Tavares back on the ice now, there still feels like not just the chance of getting through this series, but the grander picture of doing more later in playoffs. And that's inspiring that you're not on some hopeful journey, hopeless journey, that there could still be the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. So I think that should be some level of inspiration for the guys.
On the other side of the puck, the Montreal Canadiens have had trouble scoring this entire series. They've tinkered with their lineup here and there. We've seen Cole Caulfield in, and it hasn't seemed to have changed their fate so far. It's a pretty basic question, but it's the hardest thing to do in the game, Justin. How does Montreal generate some scoring and some more offense against this Maple Leafs team?
It's a very good question. And, you know, with their team, the way that they score, it's not like they're going to put it through, you know, TJ Brody skates and then dangle Riley and, you know, finish on a breakaway or something. They don't really have those guys. So this is a team that needs to get pucks to the crease and have Brendan Gallagher skate in, bang one off his helmet and into the net and, you know, do a lot of the stuff around there, around the net that can make them effective. The other thing is, you know, score a power play goal. They put in Gustafson tonight, who, you know, not a defensive stalwart, but he can help their power play. So if they can find a way to grab a special teams goal, grab an ugly one or two, Carey Price is Carey Price, and then you just worry about game six back in Montreal.
My last one for you, from a guy that's played the game at a pretty high level and yourself, you think Dominique Ducharme is the right kind of coach for this Montreal team? Because we've seen him try to implement some changes there since he took over, and to middling success. We know about the stretch that they had at the end of the season that, you know, they didn't exactly go into the playoffs on a high note by any means. And, you know, now it seems as though those troubles have kind of followed them into the playoffs. You think he's the right guy for this group, or do you think someone else might be better suited to take over in the offseason?
You know, I found it hard this year to, you know, judge the performance of all coaches, just given how weird the year is and condensed schedules and all the rest. The Habs in particular, because, you know, it's a COVID shortened season. You fire a coach partway through and give a new guy the reins. You know, then they have their outbreak and their season gets even more condensed. It's like, I can't tell if what he's doing is not working or if he's just a victim of circumstances. So, like, I don't want to say he's not the guy, but I can say this, that after his brief tenure so far, it hasn't worked. So whether you want to put that blame on him or not, he probably deserves more time and a fairer shot to find out if it's going to work or not.
He is Justin Bourne from Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and Sportsnet.ca. He joins us right now to talk all things Stanley Cup playoffs on the big show, Sportsnet 960 here in Calgary. He's been a great story, UC Saros, that is, in Nashville. What a fun series that's been. The only other game tonight, Justin, do you think the Preds have it in them? It's been a homer series so far. Last three have gone to overtime. I don't know if anybody expected it to be this difficult for Carolina, but give Nashville a ton of credit. Both buildings have been electric. It's been an awesome series. I think we all deserve a game seven, don't we?
Yeah, we do. This is I'm trying not to get caught up in the whole, like, the crowd of Nashville and how hard it's been for Carolina, and it's been a lot closer than we think. Like, going into the series, I thought Carolina was going to sweep them. I thought they would just beat their pants off, go away, no problem. There's no reason for me to think that the rosters have changed or that both their regular seasons weren't real. I still think Carolina is a much better hockey team. So I'm going to say no. I'm going to say Carolina ruins everyone's fun in Nashville tonight and moves on to the next round. But I think for entertainment's sake, it would be fun if we got a seventh game.
before we let you go, I do want to pick your brain on the other Canadian clubs, because Winnipeg, of course, awaiting the winner of Toronto, Montreal. How impressed were you with that four-game sweep over Edmonton? I know you took a lot of flack for picking the Jets, but you also took them in seven. So I think there was a little bit of surprise there for you. But how impressed were you with what the Jets did in four games over Edmonton?
Well, it's really hard to get past your disappointment and frustration with Edmonton, you know, and to focus on the Jets. Like, all I've talked about over the past few days has been, what happened at Edmonton? What now with Edmonton, Edmonton, Edmonton? And I haven't even really thought about Winnipeg. You know, I thought the Jets did what they had to do, which was essentially drape themselves over Connor McDavid and try to limit him as much as possible and hope the games are close enough and they could win with goaltending. And they did. So you got to give them credit, right? Paul Maurice had them play in a way that gave them a path to victory, and they took that path. So full credit there. They got lots of time to game plan for, I'm certain they're pre-scouting the Leafs and picking through all the Leafs video right now and planning for them. So they should have a little leg up knowing their opponent. Toronto would still be focused on Montreal and may have to play, you know, three days from now if they win tonight. So should be a little bit of an advantage for Winnipeg heading into game one.
Justin, I just had one more for you. I just wanted to hop in and get your thoughts on what we see.
You're going to ask him what Edmonton should do.
I was just going to hammer it down on you as if we haven't had enough of those talks ourselves here. Officiating, really, in the offseason, or in the postseason, I should say. Taking a lot of flack for different reasons and the seeming different standard between regular season and postseason. Do you have a problem with it? Do you think it hurts the product that there's such a difference between the regular season and the postseason, or this is just how it is? Guys are aware of it and have to adapt to it.
You know, I heard someone say recently, I forget who it was, that they don't think the officiating, you know, the officials changed their standard of refereeing. They think the players change the way they play. And so there's so many more infractions and you're making subjective calls that it's like they just can't be on the whistle all the time. So, it is a talking point. Like, I would love to see the NHL get to a point where they look at how the NFL has protected quarterbacks, how the NBA, you know, gives generous calls to guys like LeBron and Michael Jordan before him at the rim. You know, I think when you go to the net and you're Connor McDavid, the onus is on the defense to stop him cleanly. And when they don't, I think those penalties should be called. So I don't have a problem with the officiating generally. I have a problem with the officiating against star players and how that I think that they're asked to sort of deal with more than your average player in the league.
Typical guys that always get the calls, Bourne, McDavid, Jordan, all those kind of guys, right?
I never slashed anyone in my life. I couldn't draw a penalty. I stayed away from traffic as much as possible.
Final one for you, and then we'll let you go, Bourne. We appreciate the time, as always, but I know you just tweeted about it, and it has been a pretty big talking point. I'm with you, by the way, 100%. I understand it's his right to appeal, but I think Nazem should have just shut up and taken the games, because I thought eight games was actually, you know, probably right where it should have been. What do you think of the Nazem Kadri suspension and the subsequent appeal, and what do you see as the outcome when it's all said and done?
Well, I think it's ridiculous that he's appealing. Like, multiple times in the playoffs, he's been suspended for somewhere between dumb and violent acts, if not a little bit of both. And then the third, you know, this one here is a brutal hit. I think it's a brutal hit. And, you know, on a guy who should know better and hasn't learned, he gets eight games. He should get at least that. And then to appeal is just like, you know, you have all these players in the NHL that stand up and say, well, you know, Tom Wilson should have got more for what he did on Panarin. The player safety doesn't care about the players in the league, or so-and-so should have got a suspension for this. The player safety doesn't care. And then they're okay with their union. You know, so if 100 guys stood up and said, you know, we'd like to stop spending our union money on trying to lower suspension for the guys who are hurting us. Like, that's not the guy that needs protection here at Nazem Kadri. It's Justin Falk and the future Falks, you know, who are getting hurt by some of the predators in the league. So I think it's ridiculous that you don't hear from more players about this. And to be honest, I think Gary Bettman should say, you want to appeal that? I think that was more than fair. Here's 10 games or whatever it may be for Kadri.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. Thank you so much for the time, my man. Enjoy the games tonight, and we'll catch up again as these playoffs continue. Appreciate it.
All right, look forward to it. Thanks, guys.
You bet. There he is, Justin Bourne on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Open for takeout and delivery. When you're tired of cooking, call 403-248-3344. Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar at 6060 Memorial Drive, Northeast. We mentioned it. That guest hotline is going to get a workout today. It was announced yesterday. The Match 2.0 is coming. Plus, 50-year-old Phil Mickelson is a major winner again on the PGA Tour. All things golf with Adam Stanley next on the Big Show, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
You're locked on to the Big Show, Calgary Sports Talk in the afternoon. Okay, smart speaker, play Sportsnet 960.
Welcome back. Happy Thursday. Will Nault along with you on the Big Show. And as you just heard in trending now, good big league debut for Alek Manoah for the Toronto Blue Jays. The game is live as we speak on Sportsnet 1. The Jays leading 2-0 in the top of the fifth inning. Let's go down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline as we shift gears to talk all things golf with our man, Adam Stanley. Mr. Stanley, how are you, sir?
I'm doing pretty good. I had my first round of golf earlier this morning, so I'm feeling nice.
Where I was going to start, I saw your selfie, giant smile on your face. Yeah. It's been a long time coming, and I'm sure you had a blast this morning, so that's cool to see. And were you shooting it like 50-year-old Phil Mickelson today, or what?
No, I could have really used some nice tips. I was like, man, I'm just going to go try to hit bombs, and I hit like little dribblers off the tee, and then that was it. But it was just nice to be out.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I know people here in Alberta are happy to be on the course, albeit with limitations. And hopefully we open things up a little bit more here in the coming days and the coming weeks. I mentioned Phil Mickelson jokingly, but it is the good place to start because he's a major champion again. He's 50 years old. And man, that was a pretty fabulous 4 days to watch. And I know he even mentioned on Saturday after his third round that, you know, he felt he was playing better than what his score showed. Sunday, it was pretty much in control for most of the day for him. How impressed were you by Phil Mickelson at last weekend's PGA Championship?
Yeah, wasn't it nuts? Like, it's 2021, and here we are talking about Phil Mickelson winning a major, winning the PGA Championship, just winning on the PGA Tour again. And it was one of those things, it shouldn't have happened. Like, Phil was coming into the week of the PGA Championship. He was like 170th or something like that on tour in strokes gained tee to green. Strokes gained tee to green basically is the essential stat that shows how you're hitting it. You know, are you hitting it straight? Do you have what it takes to put your golf game together from tee to green? And he was like the worst on tour in that stat. Goes out to Kiawah Island, the ocean course, the longest golf course in major championship history, an absolute brute, and is first in that same statistic last week, first on the championship leaderboard in strokes gained tee to green. It was a masterclass. It was old school Phil. It was amazing to watch. The fans got super rowdy, as everyone saw, I'm sure. But that is the beauty of golf, I think. There is no other comparable example to what Phil Mickelson did in any other sport. And whether you were a Phil guy before or not, now you just have to go out and you have to respect him because he's done something that literally nobody else in the history of the game did. And he won a major at 50 years old. So impressive. Just amazing all around.
Speaking of amazing, it continues for top 10 finishes at major championships for Brooks Koepka. He doesn't win this thing. He should stay 2 over on Sunday. He wasn't able to really put the pressure on Phil at any point in that final round. As I mentioned, Phil was kind of in control, but you know, fresh off of that injury not too long ago for Brooks Koepka, and here he is, second place at the PGA Championship, tied with Louis Oosthuizen. What did you make of Brooks? And you mentioned the chaos with the fans. I know he wasn't very happy with that.
No, he was not. You know, the day got started pretty interestingly because Phil, you know, he cracked the face on one of his clubs. So he was late getting out the driving range and this, that, and the next thing. And then he was a little bit unsettled. And then there was a 2-shot swing on the first hole. So Brooks Koepka was leading that tournament after one hole. But then he just couldn't really get into a rhythm, like you said a few minutes ago. And then by the time they got to the 18th fairway, yeah, Brooks said basically that he thought, you know, people were dinging his leg and kind of knocking him a little bit. And he just really wasn't feeling it. I'm sure if he was winning the tournament, he probably would have been feeling it just fine and said everything was okay. But, you know, still, you have to tip your cap to Brooks Koepka because of the way that he battled. I mean, you think about the injury that he suffered and the procedure that he went through. I mean, the standard timeline for return, based on what the doctors had been telling him, was like 6 months. And he basically came back in 6 weeks. So definitely very impressive. And then obviously Brooks has been making news for all the off the golf course stuff the last day or so. But on the golf course, certainly at the PGA last Sunday, you know, still, despite the fact that he didn't win, a very solid result, especially considering how he's feeling health-wise.
We will get to what you just mentioned in a second.
Oh, goody.
I did want to ask you this, though, because, and this just might be me, but I'm curious, as a guy who covers this sport and who talks to pro golfers on a regular basis, talks to other colleagues of yours who also cover the PGA Tour on a weekly basis. This is just me as a pure observer. But, you know, the 18th fairway stuff is a fine example. The stuff you just mentioned with Bryson that we'll get to in a second with the eye roll. This is a guy to me that loves it when he wins and is a complete whiner when he loses. Is he building any sort of reputation in your eyes on the tour? Do you get the same sense? Do you feel the same way? Am I on an island here? What's your thought on Brooks Koepka, to me, who seems like a bit of a whiner when things don't go his way?
Yeah, I think this all kind of goes back to he just doesn't really love golf all that much. And he's kind of like said it as kind of a joke, but also kind of serious. Because he never grew up playing golf. He grew up playing baseball, and golf, he just was naturally good at it because the dude is absolutely jacked. So golf is like easy for him, but you know, he comes out and he says he doesn't practice and he says this, that, and the next thing. So then he becomes hard to cheer for. And then he gets mixed in to situations like this where, you know, woe is me kind of situations. And you can't help but be like, man, you're not out. You just said that you don't really like the game. You just said that you don't really practice. So are we supposed to feel bad for you now if, you know, you don't play very well? So he is definitely a very vexing person to cover and to analyze and to ask about, because he's hard to get a read on, you know, from everyone who is, I guess, somewhat close to him. You know, he is pretty funny. He's kind of just a natural jock. You know, he loves fashion. He was in GQ. Like, the guy is pretty well-rounded in terms of kind of sport and culture and fashion and those sorts of things, but it just doesn't really come off that well in interviews and sort of on the golf course and immediately afterwards, because I don't think he really loves it all that much. He's just really, really, really good at it.
And of course, you love it more when you win. So that's that certainly is understandable. Now, you mentioned the off the course stuff, and golf has had its fun this week. Even Tom Brady was getting into the fun, and we'll get to the match in a second as well. But what is the story between Bryson and Brooks? How far does this go back, and how much of a rivalry is there between the two? Because there seems to be pure hate from the outside.
Yeah, so I think it traces back to 2019. I think there's been, you know, some back and forth about, you know, the majors, and then Bryson went out and actually won one. So then he kind of shut Brooks up a little bit, and then Bryson said something about Brooks's abs, and they went back and forth on that. And then, yeah, I mean, it's one of these cases where it's like the jock guy really doesn't like the nerdy guy, but the nerdy guy just so happens to be kind of a jock too. And you know, this is what passes for kind of a rivalry in golf, I guess. But the video got like 10 million views before it was taken down, so clearly it transcended, you know, kind of the inner golf circle for a sport that's, you know, long built on sort of gentlemen of the game and this, that, and the next thing. You know, I think it actually helps, you know, the sport as a whole in terms of getting people to care about the characters. Golf, and certainly the PGA Tour, is very individualistic. You don't have teams, you don't have like individuals as part of a grander collective of, you know, a team or a league or a, you know, a group of teams. It's just really one person. And, you know, if one singular person hates one other singular person, you know, that makes for some pretty pointed content and some pretty pointed back and forths. And we absolutely saw that. I mean, those guys went, they didn't just stop at one. I mean, they started tweeting at each other. They started, you know, saying it's nice that I live rent free in your head, blah, blah, blah. But it had sort of the sports world absolutely wrapped around its finger for, you know, 24 to almost 48 hours. So it's almost 24, or it's almost 2 years worth of back and forth. They got to go play on the same Ryder Cup team in like 3 months. So that should be interesting.
Yeah, no doubt about it. He's Adam Stanley. He joins us every single Thursday to talk all things golf. Before we move on from the PGA Championship, did want to ask you another top 20 finish for Corey Connors. What did you make of his weekend on the Ocean Course?
Yeah, weekend, not so great. Thursday, absolutely spectacular. 5-under par to open the tournament. Just had absolutely everything clicking. Couldn't get back into red figures at any point over the next couple of days of the event. But it was one of those weeks where the ball striking remained absolutely spectacular. But the putting, 100%, no doubt about it, let him down. On Sunday, as I was writing sort of the recap story, the let's put a bow on this thing, Corey had like 9 putts for birdie from 20 feet or closer. And of course he missed them all. So that dude Jeez. Was absolutely striping it around that golf course. He just couldn't, you know, he couldn't buy a putt. And he said afterwards that he was too aggressive with the roll. He said he was trying to just, you know, roll it in quick, like try to slam it through. And then if you slam it by and you've got 3 or 4 feet left. So he missed those 9 birdie tries, 20 feet and under. He also missed a 4-foot par saver. So it was just not his day on the greens, but there's no doubt about Corey Connors' ball striking and the fact that his game, because his ball striking is so good, travels really, really well at the biggest sort of stages in the sport. So don't be surprised if he plays very well at Torrey Pines and the U.S. Open as well in a couple weeks.
Now let's shift gears. This weekend is the Charles Schwab Challenge, and there's a lot of Canadian connections, but we'll start at the top. The tournament director, you wrote about him in The Star this week, and tell us a little bit about Michael Toth and his story.
Yeah, Michael Toth, the tournament director. So he is the lone Canadian in that position on the PGA Tour, sort of non-Canadian Open division. Of course, the tournament director of the Canadian Open and the Shaw Charity Classic and the CP Women's Open, they're all Canadian. But Michael Toth, the tournament director of the Charles Schwab Challenge, went to school in Georgia, worked there in Atlanta for a little bit, came back to work for Golf Canada for a bit, then went to Singapore for almost a decade, worked in Singapore, and then came back to the U.S. and started work in Texas when his wife was named a college women's golf team head coach. So he's been at the Charles Schwab Challenge for almost a decade now, been all around the world. The town he's from, just outside Toronto, has a population of only 800 people. So it has been quite the journey for Michael Toth, the Canadian, who's the tournament director at the event in Texas this week. And, you know, again, quite the difference a year makes, because if people forget, the Charles Schwab Challenge was the very first event back on the PGA Tour schedule last year after the 3-month break. And now, you know, everything has changed, everything's happened. And of course they had no fans last year, and now they're going to have 12,000 fans a day on site, most of whom are going to be unmasked. They can't actually police a masking policy there because of the CDC and some other regulations that are in place there. So quite a difference 12 months make, because they went from nobody and being first to, you know, essentially having almost an unmasked full house on site at the event this year. So quite the journey, not just for the tournament the last 12 months, but quite the journey for the Canadian tournament director in his life as well.
We'll keep the Canadian news coming this week on Next Rounds on Me. You chat with Mackenzie Hughes, a lot of subjects there. And I know that he's got some thoughts on, funny enough, we'll make this interview kind of a huge donut. He's got some pretty cool thoughts on playing with Phil.
Yeah, you know, Mackenzie Hughes in the field this week down in Texas, along with a lot of the other guys. Adam Hadwin, I saw, was in the lead early. I don't think he's still in the lead, but Mackenzie Hughes, kind enough to join me pretty much a day after the PGA Championship. You know, he has in the past played with Phil Mickelson. He has in the past also played with Tiger Woods twice lost to him the first time, but beat Tiger Woods the second time. So now he's keen for a tiebreaker match, hopefully at some point when Tiger returns. But yeah, he just said, you know what, playing with Phil, it was kind of early in his career, but he was treated as an equal. And I think that that gets lost a little bit because there are guys who are veterans, multi-time major champions, but they're still on the same playing field as an individual like Mackenzie Hughes, who wasn't a winner at that point, but you know, he was out there, he was on the PGA Tour, biggest stage in all of golf, and that's how Phil treated him. So, you know, he had nothing but good things to say about Phil, not only his victory, but also just him as a playing partner as well on the PGA Tour.
A lot of Phil Mickelson on this week's conversation, Adam, but a nice place to finish. I mentioned it off the top. It returns on July 6th. How excited are you for, I guess they're calling it the Match 2.0. Of course, Phil and Tiger kicked this thing off a few years back. They did one last year for charity. Tiger's unavailable, obviously, because of his injury. So they call in Bryson DeChambeau. And this time, instead of Peyton Manning, it's Aaron Rodgers. What's your thought on the latest match coming in July in Montana?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, they keep working on the formula. So no Tiger, I think, is going to be the most fascinating thing. I'm sure a lot of people would have just tuned in just to see him. And I'm absolutely positive that there won't be as many people who tune in to watch this as the other iterations of the match. But Bryson at this golf course in Montana, way, way high up in the mountains. I mean, that dude is going to absolutely launch the golf ball through the thin air, and that is going to be interesting enough to see. Going to have to see how Aaron Rodgers does in the kind of the heat of the moment. He's a pretty good golfer, but you know, it's not really all about the golf. It's about, you know, the chirps and the back and forth. So I think this is fun. I think it's fine. People probably have an opinion either way about it, but I don't mind it. I like it. I think it's great. Great for the sport. It's something different for sort of non-golf people to get tuned into. And no Tiger is going to be impactful, but I still think it's going to be kind of cool to see.
Final one, just on Tiger. I know he spoke this week and said, you know, goal number one is to be able to walk again on my own. You and I chatted when the accident first happened. To hear that from Tiger, talk about how hard the rehab has been, the most painful thing he's been through. I would suggest, Adam, that golf is a long ways away for Tiger Woods.
Yeah, not great. He spoke with Golf Digest exclusively, so that story's up there. And yeah, it was, you know, he had no, I think he said no comment on whether, you know, when he was asked about returning to golf. So, you know what, it's end of May, beginning of June right now. We will likely not see him this year. I think maybe we talked about it, but Masters 2022 perhaps is as good a time as any in terms of timeline and potential. But yeah.
The Hurricanes are right in saying that, look, anything can happen in Game 7. You want that mentality that you're going to end it tonight and not worry about that at all.
Yeah, it certainly is, I think, desperation time for Carolina. We, you know, the cliche, yes, the fourth win is the hardest to get, but I think you nailed it on Saros. He has been brilliant, but he's also had a ton of work, and you wonder if he can continue that level of play all throughout this series. The last three have gone to overtime. Colton Sissons is bang on. It's two very evenly matched teams. I have to side with our earlier guest, Justin Bourne. I just can't see this thing going to a seventh game.
And we'll end it on the Blue Jays and Yankees playing game one of two today. Alek Manoah making his major league debut, and it's going pretty well.
You know, he'll talk a little bit out there. He'll look in towards the plate a lot. He is not shy. 0-2, and there's a changeup to get him swinging. Nasty stuff as Manoah strikes out Odor.
And look, his first strikeout came against a player pretty close to the minds and hearts of Jays fans in Rougned Odor. Odor struck out twice. He struck out Aaron Judge. Seven total through five and a third. Will, fun start from one of the top prospects for the Jays.
Yeah, Rougned Odor can't play baseball anymore. Nope. So that's an interesting decision and experiment for the Yankees. I believe he's hitting 160 on the year. So, but yeah, Manoah's been a lot of fun. He is an absolute beast out there, 6'6". He's throwing with a ton of power today, and I think that's been the most impressive thing about this start. Not only is he doing it on the road against the Yankees, but he's coming right at them. He is aggressive. He is in the zone. He's in their face. He's overpowering them. And his secondary stuff isn't too bad either. The fastball has been popping, though. Seven Ks, as you mentioned. And he has the second most by an opposing pitcher making his big league debut at Yankee Stadium in the history of Yankee Stadium, part one and part two. The record is 11 Ks back in 1964. So that obviously at the original Yankee Stadium. But Manoah's been fun to watch, man. And for a guy that I would say Logan had a fair bit of pressure on him coming in, seemingly doing pretty well facing that pressure.
Yeah, so far so good. No intimidation factor whatsoever for the young man. It's not an easy spot to do. There's some beasts in this Yankees lineup. He's already earned a plus in my book for getting the best of Rougned Odor. MLB player or not, I still love seeing him fail at this level, so that's been good. And if you've watched any of the broadcast today or you get a chance to, while Manoah's on the mound, he's got a good amount of friends and family who have made it there, and they are cheering him on at every pitch. It's great to see. As of right now, it's been next to perfect for him in his MLB debut. It's been great to see.
Yeah, full family and friends there. 2-0 Jays. This one's in the bottom of the sixth. You can watch it on Sportsnet 1. Robbie Ray and Jordan Montgomery will go in the finale. That one will follow about a half hour after this one. That's headlines.
Big Show Headlines, brought to you by Hyatt Infinity. Finance your Infinity from 0% or save up to $14,000. Hyatt Infinity, Heritage Meadows Road on Luxury Lane.
Should also mention just really quickly, I talked about the Tiger Woods news with Adam Stanley. He came out today with an interview and says that, you know, number one goal for him is to be able to walk on his own. The rehab has been super, super painful after that car accident in California. While in the NFL, first-round pick has been offered for Julio Jones with a mystery team, as maybe they do get that first-round pick for Julio. And Todd Gurley is visiting the Lions in Detroit today as the NFL offseason continues. That'll do it for the 4 o'clock hour, or the 3 o'clock hour. We're moving into the 4 o'clock hour. Derek Wills joins the show next. We focus back on the Stanley Cup playoffs and, of course, give some love to Cam Talbot, who was brilliant again last night for the Minnesota Wild. That as we continue on a live edition of The Big Show, Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
The Big Show is live and streaming at sportsnet.ca/960. Sportsnet 960, The Fan, Calgary.
Daily Calgary Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Awarding enhanced trade-in values on pre-owned vehicles. Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, minutes from the airport.
Welcome back to the program just after 4 o'clock here on a Thursday edition of The Big Show. And 4 o'clock means, yes, another edition of the Daily Flames Roundtable, which means we're joined by the radio voice of the Flames, Derek Wills, Will Malt, and Logan Gordon along with you. And Derek, we're going to kick things off with the Leafs and the Habs, a game you're going to hear live right here on Sportsnet 960 in less than an hour. As the Habs, well, they try to keep their season alive. They've scored 4 goals in 4 games of this series. Pretty simple. I think the best way to force a game 6 would be to find more offense. But the problem is, how are they going to do that against this Maple Leafs team? I'm curious what your thought is. How can the Montreal Canadiens force a game 6 back in front of their own fans on Saturday night?
Well, it's not going to be easy, Will. You talked about the fact that the Canadians have scored 4 goals in 4 games. That's not going to cut it. I mean, the fact that they won game 1 2-1 was almost a miracle. I mean, keeping that Maple Leafs team to 1 goal, it's not going to happen very often. You've got to score 3 to win on most nights in this league. And I think the Canadians are going to have to get to at least 3 to keep the series going with a win tonight. And I don't know. I don't know if they can get there. I mean, Carey Price has been pretty good. He's given them a chance to win. He's got a 258 goals against and a 920 save percentage. So goaltending hasn't been the issue. Goal scoring has been the problem for the Canadians in this series. And we talked about it a bit yesterday, and we can talk about what the Canadians haven't done, and that's score enough goals. But I think we should also focus on what the Maple Leafs have done. They've evolved defensively. They're better as a 200-foot team now than they were last season. And I think Sheldon Keefe's done a great job getting guys to buying into playing the right way, especially at this time of the year. And you know, this is a Maple Leafs team that can win different ways. They've got great goaltending from Jack Campbell for most of the season. So the Canadians are going to have to find a way to get to him tonight. And pucks to the net and bodies to the net. I know it sounds simple, maybe too simplistic, but when you're struggling to score, I think kind of dialing it down and getting back to basics and doing the little things, sometimes the hard things, are what can get you going, and maybe a greasy goal or two is what the Habs need right now. But you know, the Maple Leafs have done a good job defending and playing without the puck. So you know, they can beat you in a 6-5 game. They can beat you in a 1-0 game. And that's the challenge the Canadians face. I think in order for the Habs to extend this series, they're going to have to win a low-scoring game. But as I've said, the Maple Leafs can win those, and they can win the high-scoring ones too.
Yeah, I think back to basics is the best way for Montreal to get back into this period. I think that you need to start doing the things, get as many pucks on net as you can, get bodies to the front of the net. We talk about some of these guys in that Montreal lineup that seems best suited for that, like a Josh Anderson, a Brendan Gallagher. Those are kind of guys that I want doing those sort of things. I don't care, you know, don't talk to me about rush chances or, you know, making the fancy play right now. Those are areas that you guys specifically, I think, can excel at. So go out and just bring it back to the basic stuff. Get as many pucks towards Jack Campbell as you can. And I think if Montreal can get one early, maybe plant a small seed of doubt into Jack Campbell and the Toronto Maple Leafs. Because as we talked about with Justin Bourne a little bit earlier, Derek, you know, this Maple Leafs team hasn't gotten over this hump in a very long time.
Yeah.
And fans or no fans, they're still going to be feeling that pressure. So if you've got, you know, a Montreal team here that's had a rough end to their season, the postseason hasn't exactly gone their way either, despite a win in game one, you've got nothing to lose at this point. Go out and absolutely lay it all on the line, put the pressure on Toronto, and maybe find a way to push this to game six, and maybe you can get a boost from the fans in the stands. But as of right now, I need Montreal to do more of the basics that are going to be successful, are going to make them be successful, excuse me.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it, and that's kind of where I'm at too. It's go back to the basics and try to maybe use whatever sort of pressure there is. And I think that, you know, again, give Kyle Dubas a lot of credit. I think he's done a nice job, to your point, Logan, about, you know, kind of the mental challenge and the fact that this group hasn't gotten over that hump in, you know, quite some time. There's been a lot of first-round exits for this core group of Matthews and Marner. But, you know, this season they've added a ton of experience. They've added a bunch of guys that have been there before, and I understand that was mostly the case last year too, as this is, you know, the second time with Jason Spezza on their roster. But I also think there was something to be said about the COVID pause, and it had different effects on different teams, and you know, it's not the true indication of that team in a playoff round after an 82 game regular season. So I like the Leafs in this spot for sure tonight, and Montreal just needs to find a way to get some offense. Easier said than done, but again, I look at Brendan Gallagher, how much we talked about how big his absence was and how difficult it was for Montreal when he was gone. But he's got no points in four games of this series. And Cole Caulfield's had his chances but hasn't been able to really cash in. And the power play has been weak, and that's no secret. That's why Dominic Ducharme is inserting a guy like Erik Gustafsson in the lineup tonight. So we'll see what happens. And the X factor for me, Derek, is you can't really measure it. I know he's been a huge part since going down, whether it be over text or video call, but I just can't imagine that the Leafs aren't feeling it after seeing their captain on the ice before them today for morning skate. And, you know, again, it just feels like Montreal is kind of against Mount Everest here tonight.
Yeah, and for me, the start is incredibly important for the Canadians. They have to not only plant the seed of doubt in the Maple Leafs' minds, even if it's only for one game, but I think they have to plant the seed of belief in their own minds. Because when you have struggled to score like they have, and it's not just in this series. I mean, they struggled to score in the back half of the season. Got off to a great start offensively, a great start period in 2021. But then everything tapered off for them. The offense tapered off, the defense, the goaltending, the power play, the wins. So this is a team that certainly wasn't trending in the right direction going into the playoffs. And you know, something we haven't talked a lot about, guys, their schedule down the stretch was really tough. I really do wonder how much gas they have left in their tanks. And I really do think that they're going to have to win some greasy games by scoring some greasy goals. And they have guys that can do it. You talked about Josh Anderson and Brendan Gallagher, Logan. Those are two guys who can make life miserable.
If he comes out at the end of this year and says, I'm not going to be back till 2023, I don't think anyone should be surprised just based on, you know, the injury, Tiger's age, the precedent on Tiger's body as well with respect to the other surgeries he's had.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is going to be a long road, even for somebody as physically fit as Tiger Woods. When you read that right out of the mouth, that doesn't look very good, unfortunately.
Yeah, he's not 22 anymore. And as I said to you before, I understand how much pressure is around Tiger and how much he means to golf. But you mentioned, you know, wouldn't be surprised if he says I'm not playing until 2023. Adam, I wouldn't be surprised if he says I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's nothing left for him to prove. And, you know, he can focus in on his kids. Like, at this point, I understand that it's easy for me to say, and he is driven by competition. He loves it. He's not going to willingly walk away. But I wouldn't be surprised if it is the end for Tiger Woods.
Yeah, I think I would be, if you think about 2023, you know, the guy's going to be like 48, maybe 49 by that time. Like, it's the lasting image of Tiger Woods's, you know, victorious career was sort of that Masters effort a couple of years ago. Then what a moment to kind of end on. And people would rather think about that than, you know, kind of this mangled car wreck. So 100%. Who knows? I mean, it's Tiger. He's always been like this. He's always been willing to compete, and he wants to do this sort of thing. So I guess we'll see. But certainly not some good news today.
No, not at all. Adam, good stuff as always, man. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the golf, and we'll talk to you next week.
Looking forward to it, man. Thank you.
You bet. There he is, Adam Stanley on the Atlas P10 Sports Bar guest hotline, which is getting a workout today, and it might be getting you to crave some pizza. They're open for takeout and delivery. If you're tired of cooking, well, may as well give them a call tonight. 403-248-3344, Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar, 6060 Memorial Drive, Northeast. And if pizza's not your thing, we've also got some terrific ribs. We'll take a break. When we come back, Patty Dumas takes the wheel. We've got the busiest, easy for me to say. It's a jam-packed show, and there's a lot happening in the sports world. We'll have you some headlines when we come back. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
All day long, we do the searching, the editing, the filtering. We find the good stuff, add some opinion, and call it Sportsnet 960 Headlines.
Big Show Headlines, brought to you by Hyatt Infinity. Finance your Infinity from 0% or save up to $14,000. Hyatt Infinity, Heritage Meadows Road on Luxury Lane.
We're absolutely jammed, so no time to waste. Will Nault, Logan Gordon along with you on The Big Show with today's headlines. We say good afternoon to Patty Dumas. Patty, the floor is yours.
Game 5 tonight, Leafs, Habs. Toronto got a nice boost this morning, seeing their captain, John Tavares, skating on his own. Elliot Friedman joined Smith and Jones on Sportsnet 590 in Toronto, and he talked about Tavares.
Pretty clear that, you know, he visited yesterday. He's been in touch with a lot of the players. They've made sure that he's still very much part of what they're doing. And to see him go out on the ice this morning, I'm sure it was huge for them. And, you know, I don't think there's ever like a good time to lose in the playoffs. You try to win and finish your series as quick as possible. But I have no doubt that there's a group of them in there saying, hey, if we wrap up this series and we move on to play Winnipeg, that only increases the chances at some point that he's going to be able to play.
With that said, still a very business-like atmosphere in the Leafs locker room, according to head coach Sheldon Keefe.
Normal, professional. I think the guys are very business-like and treating it like they have other games in the series. I think that's been kind of the messaging for our group is to not look beyond your first shift or our first period here tonight. That this game is the hardest one to get. We are expecting it to be our best game of the series because we feel like that's going to be the effort that's going to be required. So that's what we went through this morning is just the things that have worked well for us in the series and the things that we're continuing to monitor, wanting to clean up to do better and really looking to continue to build on the things that we've been doing to get to this point.
As for the Habs, they find themselves with no more room for error and a key cog in this whole trying to get some scoring. Brandon Gallagher, he's saying the group is still staying pretty loose.
We enjoy what we do. We're here for a living. I think sometimes you got to take a step away from the whole situation. I don't realize we're playing in the National Hockey League. We're in the playoffs. We're playing in an awesome rivalry with a lot of emotion. It's fun. It should be fun. You should be able to enjoy it. Obviously, there's been times where things haven't gone our way. And you can probably see it on our faces. There's a little bit of frustration, but part of your job as an athlete is to block that out and come ready to play. We have a new challenge here tonight. You're not looking at the situation you're in as a whole. All you're looking at is just winning one game. We know we're capable of doing it. Find a way, have some fun. Make sure it's not our last day with each other.
Lineup notes tonight, no Nick Foligno, third straight game he'll miss. Looks like Rasmus Sandin back in on that third pair with Zach Bogosian. Adam Brooks remains the center between Thornton and Spezza. As for the Canadians, Eric Gustafson, the former Flame, draws in to hopefully inject some life onto this power play. Montreal needs a win to stay alive. And, of course, to maybe see the opportunity of fans in the building for the first time in the North Division for Game 6, potentially on Saturday. Will, can Toronto exercise 17 years of demons and win a playoff round tonight?
Yes, this series has not been close. I still think that if Tavares hadn't gotten hurt in Game 1, we're probably talking about it being a sweep and done. The Habs have 4 goals in 4 games. I don't understand how they're going to try and find a way. I mean, obviously, you're going to try and find some more offense, but it's been their struggle all year long. And I think you're looking at key guys like Anderson and Gallagher and even Cole Caulfield. But, man, it's an uphill climb, and I don't like their chances on the road. And I think for the Leafs, they've got that killer instinct. They've got the veteran leaders that are there. So, yeah, I don't see this thing getting to a Game 6 myself.
No, going to be in tough tonight, even if they do find a way to win. I'm still doubtful on the whole as a series. They just haven't been able to score enough to keep up with this Leafs team. And I think they'll be pretty motivated after seeing their captain back on the ice. That's always a nice boost for any team when something like that happens. So I appreciate that they're trying with Gustafson, and they're going to try to make a change, but I don't know that as a whole that's going to change their fortunes in this series. So it'll be an interesting one tonight.
Indeed, the scene shifts back to Music City, where the Predators were able to take both games in double overtime. Nashville has definitely put up more of a fight than a lot of us thought heading in, and Preds forward Colton Sissons knows just how close this series is.
I just think two teams that play a similar style, both super competitive, hardworking teams, and you know, the margin for error has been so small between the two of us. I think it's been within one goal pretty majority of the time. So just two teams that work and compete, and there's just not a lot of difference in the level of play, I'd say.
On the Hurricanes side, after coming back in Game 5 and winning it in overtime, Jordan Martinook says the focus is on tonight and not letting Nashville try and force a Game 7.
When you have the chance to close out a team, that's exactly what you want to do. You don't want to, I guess, give them another chance. So we obviously know they're going to be a desperate team, but we're going to be just as desperate because we want to close it out. But it's like you said, Game 7s are anything can happen. So we have obviously our focus is tonight.
In a series where the crowds have made such a difference in the style and quality of play, logo wouldn't surprise me to see this one head back to Raleigh.
No, it could happen for sure. Nashville's given Carolina some difficulty. They've leaned a lot on UC Saros throughout this series, Will, and I think that pushing that luck any further is probably bad news for Nashville. It's been a great story so far, and they've had a couple of overtime wins, but for the most part, I think Carolina's still proven to be the better team in this series. We'll see again. I think the
favorable for the other team, especially for the other team's goaltender. And Corey Perry's been doing it his whole career. So those three guys, they are instrumental for the Habs in this hockey game tonight. They've got to try to get in Jack Campbell's crease and in his kitchen. If they can do it, then I think Carey Price is going to give them a fighting chance at the other end. And I think what they have to do is, again, plant the seed of doubt in the Maple Leafs' minds by winning this game, and then plant that seed of belief in their own minds and kind of take it one game at a time. That's what you have to do when you're down 3-1 in a series. So we'll see if the Habs can do it. I wouldn't bet on it, but you never know. Anything can happen in one game, as we learned last night with the Wild and the Golden Knights, right?
No doubt about it. And we'll get to that in a second here with a tremendous performance from Cam Talbot. But before we get there, he had his appeal heard today by Commissioner Gary Bettman. Some were questioning why he even bothered to appeal. I know that's his right. So, I mean, all the power to you, but I'm in that camp. I don't see this getting any sort of reduction in an appeal with Gary Bettman today. And that, of course, is Nazem Kadri's 8-game suspension on that hit on Blues defenseman Justin Falk coming 8 days ago in Game 2 of that 4-game sweep over the St. Louis Blues. Derek, you got any thoughts on A, the decision to appeal, and B, do you think it's going to get reduced by any here by Gary Bettman?
I would be surprised if it got reduced, Will, just because this guy doesn't seem to learn his lesson. Doesn't Nazem Kadri remind you a little bit of Tom Wilson? I mean, in a number of different ways. Number one, they're both incredibly impactful players when they're on the ice and when they're walking that fine line between being smart in the way they're stupid and then being stupid in the way they're stupid, because there is a fine line there. And sometimes that line moves. And I definitely think it does move when you get to the playoffs. You tend to get away with more than you do in the regular season. But, you know, like Tom Wilson, more so in the regular season than in the playoffs, Nazem Kadri just seems to get his wires crossed when the Stanley Cup playoffs start. And he's done it before in the regular season, but you know, seems to take it to a new level in the postseason. He is such a good two-way player and such an important player for an Avalanche team that, thankfully for them, has a bunch of those types of guys. But, you know, if they're going to win the Stanley Cup, I think they're going to need Nazem Kadri to be an important part of it, because, you know, he gives them just so much depth down the middle and so many good options, really in every situation. So because he's a repeat offender and because he's repeated his behavior so many times in the past, I would be surprised if they reduce the suspension. But guys, you've learned the same lesson that I have over the years. Trying to predict what the Department of Player Safety is or is not going to do is not exactly a science.
Yeah, I'm not going to hold my breath, and I don't think Nazem should either, on any suspension reduction coming here. Derek said the words that I've been saying about this the whole time. He just doesn't learn, and I frankly don't have time for it anymore. And he can spend as much time appealing and going through the arbitrating process, because I don't think Gary Bettman's going to change any of this. To be honest,
it doesn't hurt, right?
I guess so, but I mean, I'm sitting here thinking, you know, maybe just show some self-reflection on this thing and just sit there and go, look, I did this. I'm going to have to pay the price for it. And move on. I get it's the playoffs, and that if you can get it down to six, then sure. But I mean, this isn't we're not talking about a guy on his first suspension. We're not talking about a hit that was questionable as being dirty. It was predatory. It was clearly to the head. There was no gray area when it comes to this. And frankly, there's no gray area when it comes to Nazem Kadri and how he acts in the postseason. So I guess you're not the only one who said it, Derek, that, you know, I guess why not? But it seems frustrating to me to sit here and have to keep talking about it and wait on it. I mean, Nazem, it should be smart enough to know at this point what his actions lead to. And he talked about it after the last one. Oh, I'm not going to be doing this again, and I've learned my lessons and blah, blah, blah. It's all empty space as far as I'm concerned, because until he stops doing it, I have a feeling he's probably going to keep doing it. So I don't think it's getting changed, Will. I would be stunned if it gets changed. I think he just needs to own this a little bit and move on. I get it's tough to miss out on playoff games, but guess who put you in that spot? It was yourself, Nazem.
Yeah, I don't really have much to add, guys. I think you kind of nailed it. I'm the same way. I think for me, it's tough to give him the benefit of the doubt, because it has been three of the last four postseasons in the first round where he's had a significant suspension. We're not talking about a one-game incident here or there. No, we're talking about multiple, you know, five, six-game suspensions that have taken him completely out of playoff rounds. And I would say that as to the why he's appealing, well, I think he's trying to appeal because, to Derek's point, if the Colorado Avalanche are going to win the Stanley Cup, and more importantly, again, give Minnesota credit because they battled, and we'll get to them in a second for a game seven, but the hockey world's all waiting on pins and needles for a potential Vegas and Avalanche duel. And if that guy's out for the first six games of that series, well, that's a big, big loss for the Avalanche. So yeah, he put himself in that spot, but he also knows his importance to his team. So I think that's why he's appealing. I just don't think he's going to have any luck, Derek.
No, I don't either. And he's put himself in that spot, but he's put his team in a bad spot, which
exactly
is what I have an issue with. And guys, I really think it's one of the reasons why the Maple Leafs. Yeah, I think it's one of the reasons why the Maple Leafs traded him. They didn't trade Nazem Kadri because he's a bad player. He's not. He is one of the better two-way centermen in this league. But when you can't count on him to not do these things in the playoffs, and when he gets himself suspended, hurts himself and hurts the team in turn, sooner or later, you're not out of patience with a guy like that. It doesn't matter how good a player he is. So, you know, if you're a fan of the Avalanche, you have to hope that this thing gets reduced, even if it's by a game or two, because regardless of who they play in the second round, they're probably going to need him at some point in time. And then you have to hope that this time he's really learned his lesson, because he said all the right things, but then he's continued to do the wrong things. He's such a good player, and I'd like to see him figure out a way to walk that line instead of cross that line like he's done so many times in the past, because he is a fun player to watch and a pretty impactful player when he can stay out of the penalty box and stay out of the crosshairs of the Department of Player Safety and stay on the ice. So we'll see if they reduce it. I doubt they will. And if they don't, when he comes back, if he can behave this time.
He is Derek Wills, Logan Gordon. My name is Will Nault. It's the Daily Flames Roundtable here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. A reminder, the top of the hour, we're taking you to Toronto with the Leafs and the Habs. Game 5 of that opening round series. Toronto looking to advance to the second round for just the first time in 17 years. Last playoff series win for Toronto coming in 2004. Well, we saw it last year in the bubble, Derek, and Cam Talbot is doing it again, this time for Minnesota. A 201 goals against average, a 937 save percentage. Hindsight is always 20/20, but Logan will agree. I know if Pat were here, he would give me the credit. I said the Flames should have kept this guy instead of going for Markstrom. I understand how attractive he was and the fact that he is a number one guy and will be here for 6 years. I get all of that. But my whole point was that goaltending wasn't really the need for the Flames. And Cam Talbot, the year he's had in Minnesota, what he's done in the playoffs, is proving that to be true. It's always a what if, because he might not have had that good a year if he was here. I understand that. But credit to Cam Talbot, and pretty cool to see him once again playing this well. He's giving Minnesota a chance, and they'll have a game 7 for it all coming up tomorrow night.
Yeah, and anything can happen when it comes down to a 7th and deciding game. And I think the pressure shifts over to the Golden Knights for game 7. You know, the Wild, they were really good against them during the regular season, so they had to go into the series with confidence. And now you win a couple of elimination games to force a 7th and deciding game. And you've got to feel like momentum is certainly on your side going into that hockey game tomorrow night. And you have to be happy for Cam Talbot. And Will, I said the same thing, not after the Flames signed Jacob Markstrom, but before they signed him at the end of last season. Cam Talbot was not the Flames' problem. Goaltending was not the Flames' problem with a tandem of him and David Rittich. And then if you go back another year with a tandem of Mike Smith and David Rittich, Smith was the Flames' best player in the playoffs 2 years ago. Talbot, you could argue, was the Flames' best player in the playoffs last season, although Sam Bennett might have something to say about that. But if he wasn't his best player or their best player, he was their second best player for sure, especially prior to game 6 of that series against the Stars where he had his first hiccup. But I mean, in the first 5 games of that series, and in the 4 games against the Jets, Cam Talbot was terrific. And he's done the same thing for the Wild. And even if you go back a bit further in his career, remember how good he was for the Oilers, getting them to within 1 goal of the Western Conference final a few years ago. So, you know, Cam Talbot's been terrific. 201 goals against, 937 save percentage, doing a great job against a Golden Knights team that's doing the types of things that we just talked about the Canadians having to do. Pucks to the net, bodies to the net, but Cam Talbot's keeping the puck out of the net. So, you know, he's been fun to watch, but I've got to give the Wild a lot of credit, because for me, what they did in the regular season, and I didn't get to see them in person, and I didn't watch them on TV all that often. I was more focused on the other 6 teams in the Scotia North Division, but I kind of thought the regular season was smoke and mirrors for them. But, you know, they've got a pretty deep team, and they just keep coming at you. And they're a pretty relentless team in the way that they play. So, you know, goaltending certainly has given them the belief that they can pull off the upset in this series. But, you know, their forwards and defensemen have done a pretty good job as well. So I'm anxious to see not so much how the Wild play in Game 7, because I'm pretty sure I know what we're going to get from them. I'm anxious to see how the Golden Knights respond to some adversity here, because everybody had them at least penciled, if not penned in, to face the Avalanche in the second round. And now they're one loss away from their season coming to an end too soon. So I can't wait to see how they respond tomorrow night.
Yeah, Cam Talbot, I think, is an interesting story and deserves a ton of credit for this Minnesota team. A 201 goals against right now in the playoffs, a 937 save percentage, 2 shutouts. I mean, those are some pretty great stats for any goaltender, and he's doing it up against a pretty formidable foe in the Vegas Golden Knights. As far as, you know, the whole discussion of whether he was here or not, whether that would be the same, it's impossible to tell. I think there was a bit of a complex here in Calgary about needing to get a number one and a true number one here that they've lacked ever since Mika Kiprusoff, and there was always sort of that belief that they needed to get that guy, and I don't know that Cam was viewed as that guy or was viewed as more of a tandem guy. So I'm personally very happy to see him having success with Minnesota. I don't know if it would have repeated here in Calgary, but by all accounts, he was a great guy and a great teammate and was always up for a battle with the Flames. So good to see him continuing on his career like that in Minnesota. And he's a big reason why this team is where they are. And they've given Vegas all they can handle all season long. And now in a really interesting spot where if you're Minnesota, I mean, what were the expectations for you going into this series? I don't know many people that chose them to win this series, you know, going away in seven even. So I think the pressure is squarely on the Golden Knights, who continue to make big moves and continue, despite being a pretty new franchise, to have probably Stanley Cup or long playoff expectations on a year-by-year basis. So if you're Minnesota, go in there, have some fun, let it all hang out, and give them everything that you've got, because you've gotten to this point, you got nothing to lose if you're the Wild.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun to watch, and Cam Talbot certainly has had a terrific year. And I do wonder, Derek, I know lots has been made about it. It's a really tough thing to measure. It certainly is, I think, to a certain extent, it is subjective. But Cam Talbot, 33 starts in the regular season, and again, we're seeing goaltenders that have maybe not as heavy as a workload in the regular season playing lights out in the playoffs. Not the first time we've seen it, and won't be the last.
No, it certainly won't be, and he's a guy who's always kept himself in great shape, and he might not have been cut out of a stone like Mike Smith, as we saw in that Goldie fight a couple of seasons ago. Smith is an absolute monster, but Talbot's always been in great shape, not only physically, but mentally as well. So, you know, he's been a fun story, and I've got to tell you guys, the Wild have been the biggest surprise of this NHL season for me. If you would have asked me before the season started, do you think there's a better chance that the Minnesota Wild finish 19 games above 500 in the win-loss column or 19 games below 500 in the win-loss column, I would have gone with the under. I just didn't think they would be competitive in the Honda West division, let alone finishing in third place behind two of the top teams in the league in the Avalanche and the Golden Knights. So I'll admit this on the air. I'm lucky enough to get a vote for the Jack Adams Award for the NHL's Coach of the Year. Dean Evason was number one on my ballot. I think he's done an unbelievable job with that team, getting them to play the way they need to play to be successful. And we'll see if it leads to a second round appearance for them.
Yeah, it was good last year too when he took over for Bruce Boudreau. We've run out of time, Derek, but I just wanted to quickly give you some time because I know you're a big cards guy, and apparently number 99 is still a big hit.
Huh. Yeah, his rookie card just broke a record, his own record. One sold yesterday for $3.75 million. So that's the 1979-1980 Wayne Gretzky number 18 OPG. There are two different versions. There's the OPG, which is the Canadian version, the Topps version, which is the American version. And as usual, the Canadian one is more valuable than the American one. But it's incredible how sports cards have come back in the last few years. And I used to collect back in the 80s. Unfortunately, I did things like play flipsies and topsies and put them in the spokes of my bike instead of putting them in top loaders or proper cases.
There's card collectors that are cringing at that comment.
I know, but you know what? A lot of us did it, right? And I'd have a collection that was worth quite a bit of money. And then I got back into it in the early 90s, which was an absolute waste of money when they just overproduced everything. Remember ProSet and Upper Deck back in the early 90s, 1991. Great rookie cards in those sets, but they made so many of them, they're basically worthless these days. And then, you know, when it comes to hockey cards, Upper Deck bringing in the short print Young Guns cards back in the early 2000s, like the Sidney Crosby and Alexander Ovechkin rookie cards, kind of got hockey cards going again. And, you know, for me, I've been focused more on football cards. I've got a lot of Tua Tagovailoa rookie cards. That was my investment during the pandemic. So hopefully that pays off for me at some point in time. But just fun to see a hobby that I absolutely loved as a kid. And then again, as a teenager, come back. And I know a lot of adults are getting into it. And it's kind of an adult hobby now because cards are so damn expensive. Unless you've got a job as a kid, at least a paper route that pays pretty well, it's hard to afford to buy packs or boxes of cards. But fun hobby. And certainly one that I know a lot of people are getting back into these days.
Yeah, I don't think I'm ever going to afford a $3.4 million rookie card. That's that's for sure.
The bigger question is, where's Derek Logan putting that Gretzky card?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I wish. I've had a number of Wayne Gretzky rookie cards in my life. I think I sold my last one probably 10 or 15 years ago for like $250. Idiot. But unfortunately, I don't have any that would grade 10. And that's, I think, one of two cards in the world that is a PSA 10. So a gem mint. And finding those 79-80 OPGs gem mint, it's next to impossible. First of all, a number of them were off center. And then because they're blue, you know, finding one with perfect corners and perfect edges is almost impossible. So, yeah, it'd be nice to find a shoebox, wouldn't it, with Wayne Gretzky rookie card, let alone a 9 or a 10 in it, because, then you're going to be a millionaire.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Derek, good stuff, man. Enjoy the rest of your day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Sounds good. Talk to you then, guys.
Daily Calgary Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Awarding enhanced trade-in values on pre-owned vehicles. Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, minutes from the airport.
We are moving closer and closer to puck drop from Toronto. It is the Leafs and the Habs. Game 5. Toronto trying to go to the second round for the first time in 17 years. One win away. And can't wait for that. Should be a fantastic affair. And again, you'll hear it live right here on Sportsnet 960. The Fan. Take a break. Come back. He was brilliant in his big league debut. Alek Manoah is the center focus as we chat all things baseball and more with Adnan Virk next. Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Welcome back to the show, leading you into Maple Leafs and Habs. Game 5 at the top of the clock live right here. Sportsnet 960, Sportsnet and CBC on television. My name is Will Nault. Welcome back to the program. And full disclosure, this interview with Adnan Virk is on tape, and I did ask him off the top about Alek Manoah. He made his big league debut today. I knew that at the time we would be airing this interview, he would have already played and started. The game would be over, so I do want to tell you this is on tape, and lay it all out there, the secrets of the trade for you. This is definitely on tape, but we started things off with Adnan Virk on his thoughts on Manoah. And maybe how much pressure is on the young man heading into his big league debut, because the Blue Jays need arms.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I was looking at overall the notable pitchers of a similar size to Alek Manoah. So, I mean, there's some guys in that mix. Obviously, Nate Pearson, fellow Jay, Brad Keller, Lance Lynn, Michael Pineda. Like, you're looking at 6'5", 6'6", 6'7", guys in that range and weighing anywhere between 250 and 280. Those are the names: Manoah, Lynn, Pineda, Keller, Pearson. Pearson, as we all know, we hope to be an absolute superstar, but so far it's been slow getting Air Pearson rolling. Lance Lynn's been tremendous the last couple of seasons, really reinvigorated himself. He's definitely one of the best pitchers in the American League. So I don't know anything else beyond the fact he's gigantic. I couldn't tell you what his makeup is. I don't know how talented he is, but I know he's huge, and I hope he steps up huge because the Jays could use him.
What are you seeing with the Jays right now? Is it all, you know, the bullpen's obviously had its ups and downs, which I think many expected going in. The starters, same thing. You're getting some pretty quality starts from the one through three guys, and the number four and five starters. I think the ERA still remains over 7 this season. It's a team that, you know, broke their 6-game losing streak in the opener against the Yankees on Tuesday. But it's a team that I still think is learning how to win. But there's no question their biggest need right now or biggest desire is to get arms. And that's why I feel like there is kind of that want or that desire to put pressure on Manoah too.
Yeah, I think, listen, you mentioned the bullpen. It certainly has been disappointing. You know, you look at the Jays overall, Will, and some of the pitching has really worked out. You know, you have to take risks. And sometimes guys work out, sometimes guys don't. And Ryu has been a great signing so far. Robbie Ray has figured things out, which is great. Steven Matz pitched brilliantly in his return to New York City, former Met pitching against the Yankees. But then others have done work out. Tanner Roark stinks. Rod Stripling, not good. And then the bullpen, they had a couple injuries. Obviously, the signing Kirby Yates, not good. So this is where it starts to challenge the team. And I think a lot of times teams can be top heavy. But if an injury or two happens, they're in real trouble. So I know you, me, and Patty were talking at the start of the year, the fact that they had to make some moves at some point to acquire some more starting pitching depth. And they were not able to do so yet. I think they're waiting to see how the season plays out and then make some moves. And you have to hope that you can hit on a couple of these guys. So if Manoah can up and be a, you know, real shot in the arm for them, and no one's expecting 7 innings, if he can just be 5 innings and 3 earned runs, you hope with an offense they can pick them up, and that would be the key.
Man, another fun subject when it comes to the Blue Jays. I don't know where you would put him on the power rankings. I wonder how much he's involved in your discussions daily at MLB Network, Adnan. But is Vlad Jr. the best hitter in baseball right now?
Dude, he's unbelievable. I know we were talking before and you were giving me crap that I wasn't saying him for MVP, but you can certainly make a case because of how great he's been. I mean, I just love what Ohtani's doing in terms of both pitching and hitting. Obviously, Trout, tremendous, but now he's gone 6 to 8 weeks. So with Trout gone for extended absence, like Vlad Jr. was second on all the major categories behind Trout in terms of OBP, OPS, et cetera. Well, now, you know, only Vlad Jr. has more home runs than Ohtani and Garcia in terms of a couple of guys. Adolis Garcia has been great so far this year. He's got 10 home runs this month, been great for the Rangers, and, of course, we know Ohtani. So the fact that 2 years ago Vlad Jr. is being discussed as and jokingly referred to as the most overhyped prospect in baseball. And then last year it was all of a sudden, not necessarily a bust, but just overrated. We're expecting genius and he's okay. Well, now all of a sudden it's like, oh, dude, he might actually be the best hitter in baseball. Like, his improvements in his StatCast data over the last two seasons are ridiculous. I'll give the basic numbers. So 16 home runs, leads everybody. 41 RBI, tied with Trey Mancini, 1121 OPS. This is a great one. He has more walks than strikeouts, 31 over 29. Now, StatCast, I don't know how this will play on the radio. I'll try to make it simple. But your WOBA, which is your on-base average expected, you know, a year ago it was 331. It's now 440. So he's doing much better in terms of catching up to exit velocity. His exit goes great. And his barrel percentage. It's a really nerdy stat, Will, but barrel percentage simply means if you barrel up more balls, you're doing better. His barrel percentage a year ago was 8.7%. It's now 16.1%. So he's doubled it up. You barrel up a ball, you're going to do some damage with that ball. And his chase percentage, again, chasing bad pitches, staying in the zone. This is the mark of a good young hitter, more disciplined. A year ago, 24.6. Now 19.2. He shaved it off by 5%. So that's where you're seeing an immeasurably better hitter. And he's great, great against the Yankees. Hitting 391, 451 on base, 688 slug, 4 home runs, 14 RBI in 17 games against the Yankees since the start of 2020. So Vlad Jr. made those adjustments, barreling up more balls, chasing fewer bad pitches. He's got great power, and right now he very arguably could be the best player in the American League. It's amazing.
He's Adnan Virk. He joins us every single Thursday here on the Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. We're talking all things baseball to begin our chat today. You mentioned the name Ohtani. I know some roll their eyes or don't care about the home run derby, but this guy's got to be in it, right?
Yeah, well, he's awesome. I mean, the season he's had is just ridiculous. And he's great for the game. You know, the two most exciting players in baseball, I tell you every time, are Fernando Tatis and Shohei Ohtani. And love both those guys. And the fact that, you know, Ohtani has been able to stay healthy, that's the key, right? As soon as his, you know, two starts with the Angels, a lot of his velocity was down by 5%. He really struggled. And so now all of a sudden, he's healthier and the pitching is there, but the offense is just really ridiculous. I mean, that's a good debate to have with friends around the bar. What's more impressive, Ohtani as a hitter or Ohtani as a pitcher? Ohtani as a hitter, I'll tell you this, he's slashing 314, 405 on base, 857 slugging, 5 home runs, and 112 RBI over his last 11 games. He hit his 15th home run of the year on Tuesday, and as a hitter in 45 games this year, one more than his total from 2020. 2020, he played 44 games. This year, 45 games. Last year, he hit a .190. This year, .269, almost 80 points better. Last year, .366 slug. This year, .632. It's almost 300 points better. And last year, 7 home runs, and this year, 15 home runs. He hasn't just made a step this year. He's made a gigantic step. And again, if he stays healthy, then Ohtani is always going to be must-see TV, whether he's pitching or he's hitting. And as for the point about getting him in the home run derby, that's a no-brainer.
He's hitting home runs at his nipples, man. I mean, like, that doesn't happen.
It's true, man. It's his – glad we got nipples in the conversation. But his home runs, like, at the high part of the zone, I don't know the most updated stat, but I think it was around 850 slugging percentage on pitches high in the zone. Think about that. It's hard enough just to get to a high fastball. He does so and does damage with it.
Yeah, it's unheard of for sure. You mentioned Trey Mancini as well, who is tied with Vladdy for the league lead in RBIs. The Orioles going to get a haul for this guy?
I'm sorry, who was the name you said?
Trey Mancini. Is the Orioles going to get this guy?
So it's a good question, Will, because Mancini, the Baltimore actually, I said like a week or two ago, I was looking at their numbers. I'm like, you know what? They've actually had a tough schedule, and they're only 5 or 6 games under 500. So I'm like, listen, they're not contenders, but they've actually hung in a little more admirably than you might realize. But Mancini, this guy's the comeback player of the year. I mean, he's coming off of cancer. There can be nothing more depressing, damaging, challenging than that. And so far, he's been a really good hitter for them. So it's one of those human interest stories, comeback stories that we all love to see. But he's actually really been good. And I mentioned Baltimore is doing okay. Well, now they've lost 12 of the last 13 games. They're getting outscored 90 to 56 over that span. They've lost 8 straight overall. So Baltimore went from kind of like, eh, you never know, second Walker, to like, no, this team is terrible. Ryan Mountcastle is a big part of their future. Austin Hayes is as well. So, yes, Mancini will get dealt somewhere, and he's had a really strong comeback here.
Final one on baseball today, and that's a massive blow in your neck of the woods. The Mets losing Syndergaard for 6 weeks and could be more at this rate.
Well, it's crazy. I was just talking to Dan O'Dowd, the former Rockies general manager. He's a great guy, and he said, listen, I'd be surprised Syndergaard even pitches this year. And he said what happens is when a guy comes off of Tommy John, they always think like, you know what? Give it a year, year and a little bit, and he'll be back. And instead, it doesn't work that way. So the plan was Syndergaard back in June-ish, right? So now we're almost in June. They're going, we'll push it back 6 weeks. So now all of a sudden it's mid-July. And he goes, honestly, if he's not ready around mid-July, late July, they might say, you know what? Why are we pushing this? Why are we pushing this for 2 months? Especially if the team isn't playing well. Like right now, they're in first place. There's 3 games that separate first place to fifth place. It's about as narrow as it gets. And that team has about 16 players in the IL at last check. So for Syndergaard, if he's hustling to come back and it's, you know, August 1st, and you go, dude, why don't you just give it a couple more months and just come back next year? Like, I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility. I get it. If you're healthy, you want to work, you want to pitch, you want to show people what they have. But this setback is significant. And for the Mets, they have to try to make some moves to bolster up their depth. But some of this is just bad luck. There's no question about it.
I lied. I do have one more, and it may be the biggest story in baseball right now. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about it. Josh Donaldson getting into it on Twitter with Dallas Braden says, here's an idea for you. It's crazy. I'll throw it out there. Stop cheating. And Mike Schilt, of course, of the Cardinals going off yesterday on a rant after his pitcher was asked to change his hat. What do you make of this substance gate, I'll call it, when it comes to pitchers and getting a better grip on the baseball?
Well, I love Dallas Braden. He's one of my all-time favorites. We worked together at ESPN for a couple of years, and he is an absolute beauty. He's so funny. He's always outspoken and just a great, great dude. So, listen, I wasn't even following the story. I just heard Dallas Braden. I'm like, oh, I'm in. I'm supporting Dallas no matter what. Listen, pitchers have had to deal with a lot over the years, and any advantage you can have, they're going to go for it. And whether it's, you know, applying some substances, legal or otherwise, that's happened since the game began. Now, I understand baseball has to police that. Of course, I'm not condoning cheating. I'm just saying you'd have to be awfully oblivious if you did not think pitchers were trying to get every advantage that they could. And hitters right now are desperate to get any advantage they can because nobody can hit. The batting average is lowest since 1968. It's going to be in the 230s. It's been pretty abysmal. So I definitely get it where, hitters are concerned saying, man, these pitchers are already so great. What other advantage can they have? And I love Mike Schilt, by the way. I met him a couple years ago when he won the Manager of the Year. He's a great guy. The reason I love him, Will, is he could be you or me. The guy's never played baseball at any minor or major league level. He's a manager of a major league team. So I'm always cheering for Mike Schilt. Schilt happens. He's always very passionate. The guys love him. So I kind of just view it with a jaded eye and say, listen, boys will be boys. They'll often try to take any advantage that they can. But on a personal level, I'm always on Team Braden, and I like Mike Schilt a lot, too.
He's Adnan Virk. He joins us every single Thursday here on the Big Show on Sportsnet 9 at 6 in the Fan. And now it's our typical Adnan chat where we bounce all over the map. And I guess first off, let's talk a little NHL playoffs. What's caught your eye in the chase for the Stanley Cup?
I wanted to pause as well. Since I'm at work, I did find my Manoa notes. I'm going to give these and we'll go into hockey. 3 starts at AAA Buffalo, 3-0 with a .50 ERA, 27 strikeouts, only 3 walks. No minor leagues being played in 2020. He's thrown only 35 career professional innings. According to MLB.com, 2-seamer and a 4-seamer both sit in the mid-90s and touch 97. He also features a slider with late action and an improving changeup. Large frame at 6'6", but he can control his delivery and throw all his pitches for strikes. Let's go, Manoa. Jays Yankees tonight, 7 o'clock Eastern.
Did you, someone eavesdropping there and then slid under the door or what's happening?
I've got my notes here, so I'm going to get back on the air soon here. I'm like, hey, you know what? This is good notes here. I will ask you earlier. I just didn't have it in order. So there's your Manoa notes. Back to the hockey. As you know, I've been traveling for WWE and just trying to balance everything. So I wish I'd been able to see more. Last night, I was watching the Knicks. Little known fact, before the Raptors' inception, I actually grew up a Knicks fan because I loved Starks. I loved Ewing, and I hated the Bulls. I hated Jordan. So
what a scene last night, huh?
Oh, my God. So I actually was not watching much hockey. So I was pumped to see the Knicks win. I tell you, man, living in Jersey, when the Knicks are good, these people, I mean, it's been a long time. Let's make fun of the Knicks. It's been 8 years since they've been in the playoffs. So it's great to see them playing well. And who knows, maybe I'll try to get to Madison Square Garden and watch a game. But great scene, great win for the Knicks. As far as the hockey playoffs are concerned, I was hoping, listen, we talked last week, I think, Florida-Tampa. This would be like the best series ever. And instead, Tampa was able to regain advantage. I like that Minnesota has shown a little bit of pluck. I'm disappointed. Edmonton, just an absolute disaster. I know I'm on in Calgary. Everyone in the Flames is pumped and hates the Oilers. But I'm telling you, as a hockey fan, it's bad for hockey when McDavid gets bounced that quickly. Here in the States, you know it's a struggle to get people to talk about hockey. If McDavid was in the Cup Final, SportsCenter would care. And Fox would care, et cetera. So I was very bummed out to see that. And the Leafs and Habs, 3-1. Even though I grew up in Ontario, my best friend is a Habs fan. I hope Montreal can come back. I hope it's a 7-game series. So those have been my very casual thoughts. You?
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. I know that certainly the Battle of Florida has caught a lot of people's eye. You know, Sidney Crosby, another first-round exit for the Penguins. I'm sure that breaks your heart as a Flyers fan. And you know, I think that when you look at the way that things are shaking down right now, I know you haven't had a ton of time to watch, but I'm hard convinced to know that anyone's going to knock off the Avalanche in a best of seven series. That team looks so good. They're so fast. There's so much skill. And I know last night Minnesota pushed Vegas to a seventh game. We got robbed of it last year, Virk, in the Edmonton bubble. I just want to see a Colorado Vegas best of seven. I think it'd be a blast. And the other thing I would say about the NHL playoffs, and you would know this being south of the border, I don't know if you've been to sporting events in recent memory, but man, flipping between the Canadian games and the American games to see, you know, 12,000 fans packed into a rink in Nashville, and then you go to Toronto and it's zero. It's I mean, you realize how much you miss the fans.
Oh, man. I mean, listen, like I said, that Lightning Panthers out of the gate, you see that crowd go wild. The Nashville crowd is wild. I mean, there's 12,000 there, and it looks like there's 20,000. I mean, it was a wild, wild scene to see. And, I mean, that was one of the big things I was remiss about with the hockey of Montreal-Toronto. I watched a lot of Game 1 and Game 2, and I was like, man, if there's fans there, there's nothing quite like the fans at the Bell Centre and the fans in Ontario, obviously Toronto, going wild. So I'm grateful in America the fans are there. And it's weird, Will, like they're accelerating quickly. I mean, I think I saw something the other day. They said, full fans at Fenway next week. This is Memorial Day weekend here in the States. I believe in the New York area, Yankees, Mets will get back soon. Like, it's not just – it went from, like, you know, 10%, which, as you know, is a very paltry amount for a baseball game, 5,000 yeah. people. And I feel like it's going to be 90%. Like, sell out. Like, oh, my God. Like, wow. It's not like 10 to 30 to 50 to 80. No. It's like 10, 20. Screw it. We're back. 100% sellout crowd. The Knicks at 15,000. The Garden, like, this is great. So, listen, I'm not a doctor. I think everyone's being safe. We're doing well with vaccinations. My wife and I are fully vaccinated. People are taking it seriously here, but I trust the doctors. If they say the fans can come back, that's great. My heart goes out to everyone in Canada. And just as a sports fan, it just sucks not being able to see fans there. It sucks not being able to go. I know you've been in lockdown. My folks are in lockdown in Ontario. It's brutal, but hopefully you can vicariously see what we're enjoying in the States, and God willing, Canada will get back to what we like, which is sold-out crowds going nuts for playoff hockey.
Yeah, we had good news, positive news in these parts over the last week here. Vaccinations are rising, and we're hoping for a somewhat normal summer, so that should be pretty good. Final one before we let you go. I know you got to run. Are we getting closer to the launch of Cinephile 2.0, and what's on your movie radar right now, Bert?
Yeah, thanks for asking, Will. So next week, Cinephile returns. That'll be on Tuesday, so it's my first episode of the month, a nice little break, and I'll come back. I'm going to talk about Mayor of Easttown. It's Kate Winslet's series on HBO. Season finale is coming up, 7-episode miniseries. The big one is A Quiet Place Part 2, which opens this Friday. I haven't seen a movie in a theater in a month, which, as you know, for me is an eternity. So I don't know the last movie I saw in the theater, but I'm going to go see it this weekend. I can't wait. I've got some time now, Sunday night, to go watch it. I'm not going to be flying. I'll be able to watch a movie, A Quiet Place Part 2. And I love the first one. I'm not big into horror movies. I'm not a scaredy cat, just not really into it. But Krasinski was great, did a great job with the first one, so I'm eager for the sequel. So Cinephile back next week, recording Tuesday, probably release Wednesday, A Quiet Place Part 2, Mayor of Easttown. And I'm in a different world now, as you know. I'm with the Levitard crew. So maybe Dan Levitard will show up at some point. I'll interview his, you know, party of friends, so to speak, the pirate ship, as we know. So I'm pumped, man. It'll be fun to get Cinephile back. Thank you for asking.
And you and Levitard don't get along, so I'm sure that'll be a going whatever.
We'll keep that going for a while. Yeah,
no doubt about it. AV, good stuff, man. As always, enjoy the weekend. We'll talk to you next week, pal.
Well, you're the best. It's great to see you for a change. We're doing this over Zoom, so I get to see what a handsome young man you are.
Yeah, we'll talk to you soon. I got to see Adnan.Virk. That's what I got to see.
Yeah, and I don't know how to do that. I'm at work. I tried to get the camera on, and they said no.
You
got to
take that chocolate chip cookie off the camera.
You didn't see me stuff in my face the whole time. Thanks, Will.
See you, buddy. Adnan Virk.